The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
And if the hippies and the yippies and the disruptors of the systems will shut up,
demented spiritual experience.
Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley.
Okay, Harris, we've had a problem here.
P is equal MC squared.
The message is very simple. Think for yourself and question authority.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Shadows in the Dark. I am your host, Jeremiah Greer. And tonight, we have a wonderful show for you. We're going to be talking about Bayou Savage, a science fiction book series by Chase Walker and Dean Russell. And Chase is actually here with us, so we're going to talk with him here in just a little bit. But we're also going to get into the, well, you know it as the Paranormal Throwdown, but we have changed it to the Shadow Throwdown. We're going to be doing that the second hour, so you guys know how that goes. If you are new to the show, well, we'll get a couple callers to call in, and it's a little contest. I don't know what the prize is quite yet. Who knows? You know, we've got all kinds of books and CDs, and, well, it looks like we may be giving away Bayou Savage, the audiobook. So we'll get into that. And, of course, you know, we'll get into the rules of that once it comes along. It's pretty simple. It's a lot of fun. And, like I said, it is the Shadow Throwdown. Uh-oh, somebody's saying they hear some background noise. We'll check that out here in just a second. I think I may know what it is. I bet it is. Yeah, we are running the air conditioner right now. That might be it. We'll cut it off here in just a second when we get to our first break. I'm not sure if that's it or maybe we have some microphones turned up a little bit. Let's do this right fast. Now, you can tell me if you hear it or not. Because we do have a microphone today pointing towards the air conditioner, which we normally don't. But we'll get that situated. No big deal. And then our third hour tonight, to be honest with you, we have a guest lined up, but we have not heard from him. I don't know where he is, why he's not replying. If he shows up, he shows up. If he don't, you know it. We can always pull something out of the good old archives. We may even throw some more Long John Nebel on. So, you know, we'll figure out what goes on. But the big thing, the big thing that we've been working on over the last couple months, we've been teasing you with, is the new website. Some of you may have already noticed it. Hopefully you have. Hopefully you checked it out. But one thing to really note on the new website is that our URL is no longer shadowsinthedarkradio.com. It is completely new. We have now changed it to sitdradio.com. So I guess we just abbreviated it, is what you can say. So sitdradio.com is our new website. Well, our new URL, our new website. So, you know, if you haven't checked out the new website, you have really got to do so, because I'm telling you what, this website is fantastic. We put a lot of... we put a lot of work into it. I'm sorry, I'm laughing at old Captain Bugface there talking about hour three. Yes, I will pull that out of my butt again. So we'll get to that. But do check out the new website. And don't forget, because the new website is launched now too, we also have our contest going, the Name the New Camper Studio Contest. We've already got a couple entries for that, so we want you to check that out and put your entries in. That is for a chance to win a set of three SITD t-shirts. You will get the gray logo SITD t-shirt and the 2009 and 2010 24-hour bash t-shirts. Hey, we would have thrown the 2008 in there, but there's just no more of those left. Well, I take that back. There is two left, but they're mine, and you can't have them. So we'll so do take part in that. Also, Talking Thoughts. We played around with that segment a couple times in the past, and now it is going to be a staple in the show. So do take part in Talking Thoughts. If you're unfamiliar with how that works, all you're going to do is go to sitdradio.com. You'll scroll down a little bit to the bottom there, and you'll see the Talking Thoughts header. You'll see the image. It's a little alien holding a sign that says Talking Thoughts. Click the Read More button, and what you're going to do is you're going to vote on a subject. What happens is at 10:45 tonight, we will completely change the subject no matter what we're talking about, and that is according to whatever the whatever had the most votes. Now, this time around, we've got about five, I think, to choose from, and I'm going to check on that and tell you what we've got there and maybe let you know what's in the lead. All right, we have our existence, death, immortality, the soul and spirit, and ancient astronauts. So that is the four to pick from right now. Let's see what we're at. Looks like we've got a couple votes already in, and of course that makes sense because a lot of people didn't know we launched the new website. Right now, death, immortality is winning. So at 10:45, for 15 minutes, we'll talk about whatever the most voted subject matter is, and we'll open up the phone lines. If anybody's here with us, then we'll, you know, they're more than welcome to take part in that. If not, we'll open up the phone lines. If nobody calls in, well, you know me, I can run my mouth for 15 minutes, so I will talk about my views and opinions on whatever is voted. So do check that out. A lot of cool stuff on the new website, so hopefully you'll take the time. We've got our Twitter link, our Facebook link, our YouTube, an RSS feed to the show. We have our iTunes link. And, of course, the big thing, the big, big thing that we're so happy about is every single past show is up there. Finally, after a year, excuse me, after a year, we have finally got every single past show up. And that is all the way back to April of 2007 up to the present. So I know a lot of y'all have been looking forward to that. All the guest bios are up as well. So, you know, we put a lot of work into that. And I want to say a big, big thank you to Amanda, or many of you know her as Moonchild, hanging out in the chat room there, for the hard work that she put into that that website as well. She did some great stuff. Really, she's behind getting all of those guest bios and past shows back up. So if you're in the chat room or you know Amanda or Moonchild, do give her a big, big thank you, because I'll be honest with you, it would have probably been another 6 months that website would have been launched if it wasn't for her. So I appreciate that, Amanda. Thank you. Thank you so much for your help. Now, I think that's about all the new stuff we have going on. Oh, one more thing. The web store now has its own domain. If you go to theshadowstore.com, that'll drop you into our web store. So you can check that out. If you are, if you don't win one of those Shadows in the Dark t-shirts, through the camper contest, well, you go buy one. They're only like 10 bucks. Not a bad deal at all. So that is theshadowstore.com. But enough of that, enough of the shameless promos and all that and trying to sell you a t-shirt or two. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight. We're going to take a quick little break. When we come back, we will have Dean Russell on the phone with us, and we've got Chase Walker sitting right in front of me. So I think Chase actually is probably our first in-studio guest as well, if you don't count the 24-hour broadcast. So we'll get him on as well, and we're going to have a great show tonight, guys. So we'll be back in a moment to talk about the science fiction series Bayou Savage with Dean Russell and Chase Walker. All right, everybody. Like I said, tonight's guests are going to be Dean Russell and Chase Walker. They are the authors of the Bayou Savage book series. This is a science fiction series. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and probably a little bit more. Who knows? Because they're also musicians as well. And as everyone knows, I am a huge music fan, also a musician. I play a little bit of guitar. Every once in a while, I might bang a tambourine or two, but mainly the guitar. So, Chase, Dean, how are you guys doing?
Glad to be here, Jeremiah. Thanks for inviting us on.
Welcome, Dean.
Thank you, Jeremiah. We look forward to the chat.
Well, we're going to have a lot of fun tonight talking about this. And I had the opportunity to listen to the audiobook version of Bayou Savage, The Resurrection. And I tell you what, I really enjoyed it, and so did the wife. I think she might have enjoyed it more than I did, to be honest.
We appreciate it.
Yeah. Let's start off by Dean. Tell us a little bit about yourself to start off with.
Basically a person that went from LSD to PhD.
This is a PG show, brother, okay?
That's all right. We can get away with that.
Basically a guitar player who went to college for a long time, military basically 16 years, active duty Air Force 5 years, 8 months, 16 days, kept playing music the whole time, a lot of different bands, and went into quality engineering. And from there, basically writing this book in my part-time, having a good time, and that's about it.
Oh, well, cool. Well,
is that the condensed version, brother?
That's weird. Chase, I didn't want to step on your part.
dude, we're in this together. You know we're in this together.
All right, Chase, how about yourself? Now, I know a little bit about you because you live here, which, right. For those who don't know, Chase is actually right here in front of me, our first official in-studio guest, again, if you don't count the 24-hour broadcast. Chase, tell us a little about yourself as well.
Well, before we get into from here, and I mean, Dean was pretty much raised here in Haywood County, and I'm a transplant. I've come over here from Memphis in 1995, and prior to that, I was in Nashville, and prior to that, I was in Monterey, California, and all over the United States, traveling from one gig to the next, playing colleges and saloons wherever they would have me, and golf courses wherever they wouldn't kick me off. And Dean and I met, I think, in 96 or 97, right after I had become a dent doctor, which is kind of a bizarre little profession where you remove dents from people's vehicles without disturbing the paint. But Dean had sat on the hood of his wife's car, and she was upset with that, and Dean found me at a local dealership, and we became friends and began playing music together, and actually did a couple of gigs over in Silva at a little bookstore, and one night...
Sandu, right?
No, over in Silva.
Silva.
Coffee shop, bookstore, I can't remember.
I don't know which one.
Dean, do you remember the name of that joint?
No, I sure don't, man.
I don't either, but anyway, we're not going to plug them. But nice folks. We played downstairs, had a great time. And since that time, Dean and I have become great friends. And one night he came to our Christmas party and flipped open his laptop and said, "Look what I've got." And he had a book cover that was The Resurrection of Bayou Savage. And we got involved in that project just by sheer coincidence, and have had a lot of fun developing this character and these characters in the book, making sure that one sequence followed the other, and making sure that the characters had the right color hair and the right colored eyes all the way through the series of three books. The Resurrection is the first book, which describes was kind of a Rip Van Winkle thing that Bayou tried to do after the presumed and alleged death of his father, Razor Savage. Razor lost his life, evidently, in a battle with some very ferocious ghosts. The Magi was one of the key players in that part of the book. He was the major bad guy. And Razor looked like he'd lost his life, and Bayou got very depressed and decided he was going to take a little nap. He thought he was going to go to sleep for a couple, maybe decades, and turns out he was asleep for a couple of centuries. And so he is resurrected by the GDI, which is the Ghost Defense Institute, in the year 2206. So 200 years later, there's a lot of things that have happened in the history of the planet. One of the most important events that dictated the rest of what went on after 2012, which is a whole nother conversation. But in 2012, we have written about the great religious wars, and nobody knew that the radical Islam's jihadists would have nuclear and neutron bombs, which kind of destroyed the planet but left the buildings intact and left a lot of empty buildings. And so the homeless population were no longer homeless. Those that were left had places to live. And then Bayou got depressed, and he went into a quantum suspended state. Isn't that what we called it, Dean?
Yeah, man. It's kind of like the King Arthur legend, Jeremiah. We actually went into the whole visuals to the book. I mean, as far as the mental imagery is, you've got the way the book kind of starts off. It starts off with Bayou depressed. He's holding his guitar. He's got this power. He inherited this power he didn't want. He had a father who was a commanding person. And the father died, and he inherited this magic talisman guitar, but he's so depressed, and he's fought the ghost. He's killed every ghost out there as far as he knows, and he's just depressed. And he figures he can use the guitar to put him into a quantum suspension. He didn't know how long it would last.
Right.
But he basically made a suicide note, and 200 years later, when they resurrect him, that's when the stuff hits the fan. Because when Bayou comes back, the ghosts come back.
Right, because, yeah, from my understanding, during that 200 period that he suspended, there was really no kind of paranormal phenomenon, right?
Exactly. The paranormal activity had been plugged. The hole in the bottom of the ocean was stopped.
Right, yeah.
So what we really need now is Bayou Savage to come back and plug that hole in the bottom of the Gulf, but he's not around for that, and that wasn't part of his gig. But the guitar was a 1953 Fender Esquire.
Right.
And it had the power to activate in the presence of paranormal evil spirits, and only evil spirits. And in the presence of good spirits, the guitar would remain dormant.
Right.
But in the presence of evil spirits, the proper owner of the guitar was able to activate the guitar and pretty much use the guitar as a weapon against the spirits that were in presence to do harm to mankind. And there were, coincidentally, other musicians with a fiddle and another guitar who also had that power through a variety of reasons.
Well, that was, who were they, John and
Bob and John,
Bob and
I think,
John.
Yeah, the two guys, and one played fiddle and the other played a Les Paul.
Right.
That was so fun, Jeremiah, that writing this. I would kind of like course to the action, be thinking about all kind of, you know, my comic book background and loving comic books and just the sci-fi and the whole paranormal music thing, and then Chase would come in and put the sound effects and the details, and I would read what I wrote, then look what Chase added, and I'd get cold chills.
Now, I have to say, Razor is by far my favorite.
He is a
no BS kind of guy, just straight to the point. He doesn't mess around. I remember even one part in the book, I think Bayou mentions kind of always getting a giggle out of his answering machine. This is Razor, I'll call you back. Straight to the point. It was no big messages. This is, you know what to do. Just give it to me and I'll call you back.
Yeah. And that, the race of character was easy to write about because, right there in Haywood County, you've got some pretty direct characters.
Mm-hmm.
Chase and I both come from fathers, that kind of composite father image, and both of them military, and both of them having that real direct, they're the kind of people that would never, ever commit suicide. It wouldn't happen. Homicide? Different question.
Right. Right, yeah.
Well, homicide with due course. I mean, it wasn't that they were homicidal as much as they were vengeful.
Right.
you didn't want to mess with either one of them because you'd always wind up on the short end of the stick. I think that's how that worked out.
Now, one of the other cool things that I really, because, I mean, now, you know, I'm from Haywood County. I graduated, good old Pisgah High, whole nine yards. You know, there's a lot of references to Haywood County things.
Right.
One was Daco, which is not even there anymore.
Right.
You know, that's if anybody that's around this area, that's where the Walmart sits now. There used to be Daco there. You know, Woosley Heights. You know, there's a lot of references to Waynesville. So for me, it was kind of like a whole other dimension. You know, you could almost see them in these places, at these places, because I've ever, you know, either I've been there or I know about them. So for me, it was a great visual, visual aid for the whole story.
Well, there's a lot of references to Western North Carolina in general. Now, Dean had some experiences down in Charleston when he went to retrieve his daughter from a hurricane, if I remember correctly, wasn't it, Dean?
All right. Yeah, Hurricane Hugo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and there's a lot of paranormal activity in the Charleston Battery and Dean, what's the name of that part of town where all the houses are colored differently, but they're kept?
Rainbow Row and the Battery.
Battery. Row. That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah. So we've got some references to the Battery in the book as mm-hmm. well, and these are experiences that Dean has had over the course of his lifetime, and coincidentally, I have come into contact with folks over the years now that I've started paying more attention to paranormal. I never did pay attention before the book started. Excuse me. But, for instance, a couple of weekends ago, I was in Brookfield, Massachusetts, and I had lunch with a very good friend of mine. Hey, Royal, how you doing, brother? And we were in the public house, which was built in 1721, and the little bartender girl that was from Russia, by the way, was behind the bar and telling us stories of the haunts that live and are active in the public house in Brookfield, Massachusetts. And then as the story progressed throughout the luncheon that we were having as we sat at the saloon, there evidently are a great number of spirits left from the colonial period in our American history, and I really hope that they're around now to help us get through the mess that we're in. And there's my political statement for the night.
Now, it's my understanding, Dean, that kind of the inspiration for this maybe came from an experience you had.
Yeah, it's and that was a. That was back in the day, but yeah, the very first experience was that kind of brought the whole thing going down. I was listening to Led Zeppelin and doing pretty good, and we got me and a guy named Tom got kind of challenged to spend a night on top of Woosley Heights. It's a supposedly haunted house, and we drove up there, and we got up there, and we walked around the house, and it looked like it was kind of a spooky place, but we didn't think that much about it. The garage door was open, and we went into breaking and entering. The house was deserted. I mean, there was nobody there, but I kind of thought maybe it was some couples who, you know, it was one of those seasonal deals. So we opened up the garage door. We're both sound asleep, and I'm not making this up, man. At 2:00 in the morning, both of us, both of us woke up running down the hill, and we were in sleeping bags. We both come out of our sleeping bags, and both of us running down the hill, and we got down to the bottom of the hill, and we looked at each other, and I go, "What's up?" He goes, "Did you hear that?" And I go, "It sounded like an airplane landing on top of us." And in retrospect and doing critical thinking, it's probably some plane coming into Asheville was flying pretty low. But whatever it was real low. That is if it was a plane.
Right.
But
yeah.
Whatever it was, if it was a poltergeist, it was a loud one. Because it woke us both up into a run, and I've only had that happen to me one time in my life, and that happened to another person who happened to be beside me. I wouldn't say sobered us up, it woke us up, and we both kind of, that was interesting. And so that was the first. I've had two experiences in my life I just couldn't explain, and that was one of them. So it stuck with me. It's one of those things that's just unusual. We went back up there. We looked around. We pulled flashlights out, and then we talked to our friends to see if anybody had actually kind of set us up with some type of scare tactic. And our friends would have admitted it. They would have laughed about it, but nobody ever came forward. So it's one of those things I never could explain, and as I started writing the book, it just kind of stuck with me.
All right. Now, I just put it in the chat room and just double check www.byusavage.com, right? That's the website for the book series?
That's correct.
Yes.
Okay, well, good. Well, hopefully everybody go check that out, but we put it in the chat room. Yeah, I tell you, I mean, I've really enjoyed, like I said, I've got to do the audio book instead of the book itself. That was due to time constraints. You know, I really enjoy reading more than I do listening for the most part, but I've really enjoyed it. It's got such a great story, and, you know, part of this, because you are, it's kind of like this back and forth between, you know, again, you know, past and present. You know, we're talking, you know, science fiction future, 2206, and then 2006, you know, when all these memories. And I guess maybe that's something, you know, to kind of explain is what's really happening in this. You know, what kind of is taking place?
Dean, take the science part here, brother.
One thing besides paranormal is I love quantum. I love the whole thing about from Heisenberg principle to the whole quantum concept. And to me, the only way the book could be pulled off would be through some type of quantum state. Well, with the paranormal and actually having enough power through this sacred talisman, this guitar, he puts himself in 200-year suspension. What Steve Johnson does, the head scientist in 2206, is does a decoherence type activity, which basically what he's trying to do is just if he can break into this quantum state, he can do like a DNA sample. If there's any DNA on the guitar, he can pull it forward and find out basically at that time they had the science developed, they can do kind of like a scan of where this person's from and find out some information about this person. Well, what happens on Halloween night, spooky, 2206, everybody agrees, let's go for it because they're about to shut down the Institute because resources are running out. When right. they do this experiment, something backfires. And Steve Johnson, who's strapped in into this, imagine a hospital room and you're strapped down and they're putting this contraption on your head to see if there's anything you can pick up off this DNA sample because he's got to be able to interpret it. And when that happens, he actually flashes back and he lives Bayou's life. Like a Reader's Digest version, he lives the highlights of Bayou's psychic, paranormal life and all the experiences. And then you find out who was the legend of Bayou Savage. Mm-hmm. So again, if you think like a King Arthur type of deal, it's like you're reliving the highlights. And some voice is leading you through this. Somebody's facilitating this venture. And it is anyway, we try to put a lot of humor, a lot of Southern references. At the same time, for any musicians, we wanted to appeal to all those musicians out there who goes, what would it actually be like to have a powerful guitar?
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to have one of those. One that allows me to play some, a number one hit every time I strum, and I get paid for that.
That would be it. Thank you. I'm gonna write the next book on that.
Yeah, there you go. You know how many book ideas I've gave over this show? I'm gonna start copywriting all my ideas. No.
Yeah, sure.
But I thought that was really interesting. I mean, like you say, you know, you got Steve kind of living the life of Bayou, like kind of through his memories, and it's. You know, you get to kind of start where it started for Bayou. And, you know, to me it seems like his dad, Razor, in a way, tricked him into kind of taking over his spot. You know, he gets the 3 o'clock in the morning phone call, and it's a quirk, right? I want to say that right. You know, and he's like, hey, yeah, your dad's retired. And he said you can take his place. And he's like, you know, what's that all about?
Right. It was interesting, the interjection of the character of Quirk, who was one of the first field agents in the Ghost Defense Institute, who later became the director mm-hmm. of the Ghost Defense Institute, who later became essentially Bayou's boss. But because Quirk and Razor had had such a strong friendship relationship, that Bayou was sort of a nephew to Quirk, and they had a relationship as well. So when Quirk gets introduced to the book and introduced as the director, and Bayou is surprised by the fact that all of a sudden he is the ghost fighter that his dad had become. Then we get into the history of the guitar itself and why it has taken on the talisman properties that it became. and that has to do with the wood that was cut from the cross on Calvary. And there are some, I think, underlying religious connotations in the hieroglyphics, and Judas is involved through the whole thing. And we try to convey a message where almost anything that you can imagine is possible, and I think that's the truth of the world, is that almost anything you can imagine is maybe not probable, but it certainly has possibilities.
I have to agree with that. That's always, you know, I've said on the show a number of times, you know, I'm a believer in possibilities.
Right.
Again, it may not be probable, but who knows? I mean, you can get into the fact of other dimensions. You know, a fire-breathing purple dragon may not be real here, but it might be in another alternate universe. Who knows?
Well, that was one of the other things that we were able to do with this book, and Dean brought this forth, and I was able to kind of elaborate and colorize it. If you take interdimensional space and time, and we have Leslie Quinn, who is in the book, and Razor's granddaughter and Bayou's daughter, Mist, and Quirk, all living interdimensionally throughout the time between 2006 and 2206. Mm-hmm. And they all sort of, without giving anything away, they wind up meeting again sometime in the future. And that is one of the interesting concepts of the book, is being able to take people that theoretically had died at that one particular point in time and then became real people again later on in the history of the world. And during the history of the world, so many things had changed, yet many things had remained the same. For instance, there were still steaks and really good wines.
All right.
So we were able to, I think, assimilate enough paranormal folks, interdimensional travel, the possibility of going back and forth between the dimensions and coalescing at one point in time with everybody in the same room, unbeknownst to the people of the future. And the pathway was such that it makes for an interesting read. And for those of you that might win the contest tonight, you might make some happy times listening to the story of Bayou Savage, Guitar Ghost Fighter, The Resurrection.
I think we should. And nothing, Jeremiah, we tried to make the book a grand slam of all paranormal. I mean, I tried to put, and I know, Chase, we both worked on every superstition, every legend, everything that's been out there as far as the paranormal, we tried to include it in the book, tried to weave it in. Mm-hmm. So people would recognize it. Like the fake stuff, we go, well, that's obviously fake. Here's the real stuff. And we tried to discern enough that, and give recognition, so we respect everybody in the book. Anybody that had a belief system, we'd say, well, this could happen. But what would happen if it was true evil? So it really kept with that antagonist, protagonist type battle going back, but the one character, Leslie Quinn, who has this thing called the Bloodstone,
right,
and that allows her to actually do interdimensional travel.
Yeah,
well, nobody time was. She could do time travel too, and she wasn't too sure about doing a time travel. But when Bayou disappeared, she goes to look for him, and then when the stuff that happens. I mean, we tried to make sure that we focused on what would be a natural network of paranormal activity. So when people follow it, it's logical. At the same time, you got that twist at the end that kind of pulls it all together.
Right, and yeah, and I got tickled because her parents were so cool about her, you know, just disappearing and reappearing. They were kind of like, oh, she'll show back up in about 3 hours.
Very,
you know,
nonchalant.
Yeah, like it was nothing.
Yeah, that was cool. And the exoskeleton, which is a word I stumbled over many times during the recording of the book, but allowed Steve Johnson, who was the head lead scientist and had been for 20 years at the Ghost Defense Institute, able to enter the mind of Bayou, and Bayou being able to relate stories in present tense about things that had happened in the past. Right. And then Razor showing up inside of Bayou's mind and Steve Johnson's mind. And so that Steve Johnson is able to experience the ghost battles in real time in the year 2206, and it actually happened years and years ago.
Right. Now, the guitar, was that, you know, you said it was a 53 Fender Esquire.
Right.
So now, does that come from one of you guys? Do one of you own a 53 Fender Esquire?
Dean has one.
Oh, that's got to be a nice guitar to play.
Yeah, and what's cool about writing a book, the whole thing is that anybody from the South will recognize, first of all, the culture in the book, the humor in the book.
Yeah.
Anybody there will recognize, hey, man, these guys wrote this from a musician perspective, a what-if book. Anybody loves the paranormal, we keep enough. And anybody loves science, we tried to actually interweave this into an interesting plot with enough leverage that, you know, it's not just a boring book. It's just, but we try to put a lot of science in there to actually make people who are intrigued with this, to actually make them boost up to say, wow, what a cool concept. If you could do this, how could you explain this? And that's one thing I'm kind of proud of, is I thought we did a good job of making the science realistic. So if somebody wanted to Google this after they read something we come up with, we actually base this on real science. Not here yet, but if it was going to be here, it's probably the way it would happen.
Yeah, I was actually talking to somebody about, you could really tell that, musicians had written the book, for number one, because there was a lot of references that, you know, were true to music, things like that. You know, and for me, because, you know, I play a little bit of guitar, and I love music. And, you know, it was something kind of neat to read through the book, because, you know, some of it, you know, it rung true. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, he's talking about, you know, the E chord being so much in so many genres of music.
Right.
You know, and that's true. And a lot of people who are not musicians don't realize that. That, you know, you could play some blues, you could play some folk. It's all in, you know, that through there.
E is the key of the people, and B is right. The people of the bourgeoisie.
Right, which is a line from the book.
Which I have to give Paul Metz a credit for, because he said that once upon a time. Paul Metz is an old musical friend of mine from Minneapolis-St. Paul area. But there were experiences that Dean and I have had in different parts of the world. It's like we went to the same school together at different times. You know, and we were able to bring those people and those experiences together to make this book become what it has become. And it has become a series. And book two even delves further into the characters, and not only the characters that are present in the resurrection, but we introduce new characters in book two and in book three that will develop the whole series into a complete story. I think Dean started out with a 650-page book, and through the wiles and manipulations of copy editors and copy folks that didn't have the vision that Dean did, we've wound up with a series of three instead of a 650-page novel.
Right.
Yeah, it's like I told Chase when I first met him, you know, I'm not a professional writer, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn last night.
Holiday Inn Express.
One thing, Jeremiah, if I could put it in, musicians out there, any lead guitar players out there, the one thing I used to love to do back in the day is we'd be playing songs all night, we'd get the Free Bird.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I loved that when you go into the finale of Free Bird, I'd be standing in a club and there'd be like 300 people. I'd walk right out there, the lights are on me, and I'm just tearing that 53 Esquire up. And I mean, doing the lead on Free Bird. And the power I felt, I mean, it's just something. So I wrote the book, it was from a real feeling. That wasn't imagination. That's from actually being out there in front of people, and you feel that. The only thing I didn't have was lightning bolts.
Or ghosts.
Power guitar. But people like the lead guitar player, man, the book was written, you understand. Once you read those scenes, and the ghosts are attacking, and the only thing you got to defend yourself with is this guitar, and you have to amp it up. You have to go into overdrive. I think most people get that.
Yeah, I have to agree. And coming from a musician myself, you know, that's very true. When you're out there and you're playing, and you know, you're really, you know, into playing it, it's a whole different world. It's, you know, you are kind of in your own world. You there is a certain power to it. I mean, I've always believed there's a great power behind music itself anyway.
Agreed.
Right.
Yeah. And you definitely got some references to some great bands and great musicians throughout the book, too. I mean, I think Led Zeppelin, Hendrix, Ted Nugent is all mentioned through the book, which is, you know, these are who I guess Bayou and Razor are fans of. And, you know, that for me personally, that's kind of music I love. Nothing like throwing on some Hendrix or Zeppelin.
Yeah, also I see on the website about, I made a comment about the Holiday Inn. There was a commercial out years ago that said, I'm not brilliant, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn last night.
Right, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's still going. But Razor has a style of his own, and knowing Dean's dad, I know that he's one of the finer musicians in Haywood County, well-recognized and well-known all through the county as a very good guitar picker, but he plays banjo too, doesn't he? And
yeah,
mandolin?
Dad plays bass guitar, rhythm guitar. He plays Mo Travis style. I mean, he had Chet Atkins style. His rhythm, incredible. Yeah. You watch him play, I mean, you're in awe. So writing a Razor character was very, very easy to write.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people can relate to the Razor character in terms of that kind of toughness of dad.
Right.
And I guess is which is fitting. It's Father's Day, so hopefully you guys had a great Father's Day.
Yeah, happy Father's Day to all you dads out
there.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, because he was one of those ones. Just seemed like, well, I think it was even you know, a part of the book where I think it was right after Razor's battle with the Magi, and you know, his dad calls, and the nurse kind of gives him the rundown of how he is. He's like, oh, he'll be all right. You know, you know, he's all beat up and everything. He'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, is that not a typical attitude of a dad? You got a broken arm, walk it off. You know?
That's right.
Yeah, and speaking of Father's Day, I'd like to say hello to my children and say thanks for listening, kids. And I had a great 4 days, and I'm glad your mom's home.
Yes, we went out to eat today. We were out on the town for Father's Day. So.
Right. Yeah.
So a lot of fun. But yeah, I do think a lot of people can relate to the Razor character. I mean, I have to tell you, he's my favorite. You know, and listening to it when he was, you know, he came back on or something, I was like all ears, because he just has that attitude of just like I said, it's no BS.
Right.
You know, it is what it is,
straight
and that's
ahead.
Just how it's going to
be.
Even that attitude of no reason trying to explain it. That's just what it does. You know, I think even Bayou tried to figure, you know, ask him about the guitar. You know, why does it do what it does? It's just what it does.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was like, well, that's you know.
Why is the sky blue? Because it is blue.
Right.
And that's it. Yeah.
Being raised with the character that's based off of, as far as Razor, you know, Dad was gung-ho. There's no doubt he's still is a gung-ho person. And I basically called my childhood my military service. He never like little things. He never asked me to do something. It was always an ultimatum.
Right.
And he never said he would kill me, but it was kind of implied. I thought he had another kid. You know, there was another kid besides my sister, but I always thought there was another son out there because it was kind of like how it was optional. So, but it was always fun. I mean, it was, at least you understood. He was very, the word today would be direct. It's very
right.
Direct.
Yeah, he is. He very much is. And, you know, like I said, I think most people can relate to that. I just love this character. I fell in love with it. And then, of course, Bayou. You know, Bayou's got he's a great character himself. You know, to me, he just seems kind of like one, he wants to know the answers. I guess trepidation, maybe. You know, he's got this fearful uncertainty about what he's doing, but he's kind of got, he's kind of drawn to it at the same time.
Apprehensive and yet under orders.
yeah, and kind of intrigued, because you know he asks a lot of questions. He wants to know, but yeah, then he also accepts the answers, even though, you know, coming from his dad, it's that's the way it is. You know, he's like, okay, but he still has that curiosity of why the guitar does what it does. You know, the whole, you know, the GDI. You know, he seems interested in kind of what it's all about. You know, a well-rounded character.
Thank you. The character, like I said, was pretty easy to write. Chase and I both, when it comes to the quirk character, Chase basically embodies and looks like and sounds like, and the script was real easy to write.
Well, it's easy.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, there are things that were easier to write than others, but when it came to describing characters that we know and love and people that we're very familiar with, and even from a personal introspective analysis of who and what we are, those are the things that go into character development.
Right.
You know, so it became kind of a fun thing, and it actually it just started out as a fun thing. It still is a fun thing, and I'm trying to get book two finished for Dean's birthday coming up here this month. So,
now, what about the name Bayou Savage? Is there any meaning behind that, or how did you guys come up with that?
That's a good question. I was born in New Orleans, and my mom was from New Orleans, and my dad was from Waynesville, actually Fines Creek. Mm. And so when I was born down there, we lived in there about the first 6 years, and then we had some floods come through, and he moved back to North Carolina. But right outside New Orleans is an actual wildlife refuge, and it's called Bayou Sauvage. Oh. And it was just always the coolest name. I just always thought it was a cool name. And then I'm looking for a character that would be a southern character to kind of have. I was looking for somebody that had the New Orleans Cajun influence and somebody still had that Western North Carolina influence. I was kind of looking for that. And then the name just popped in my head.
And
so
if you
look outside New Orleans, you'll see Bayou Sauvage. If you ever go to actually Google Bayou Savage, you'll actually probably direct you to Bayou Sauvage as one of the places to go to. It's a wildlife refuge.
And the literal translation for Bayou Sauvage is wild bayou, which fits perfectly.
yeah, it does. He does fit his character. He just seems all gung-ho about it when he is, you know, in those paranormal, the haunted houses or whatnot. I love the name, though, Bayou Savage. I was even, we were driving home from Asheville today, and I was even thinking, wow, you know, if I have another kid, I might just name him Bayou.
That would be an interesting moment.
Well, my kids have interesting names anyway. We've got Orion Star and Achilles Constantine. So it'd fit right along with it.
Well, okay then, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, that'd be fun.
Well, and then, of course, you guys would appreciate this one, Dylan Garcia, which, of course, named after Bob Dylan, Jerry
right.
Garcia.
Sure.
Hopefully my kids won't hate me too much when they get older.
There won't be anybody else in the school named after that.
No. Now, I was surprised there was in Orion's preschool, there was someone with the middle name Star.
Wow.
And I thought that was unique.
No doubt.
And especially around here. I mean, this is Haywood County. And then to find someone in his preschool, same age, with the same middle name of Star, I was like, now that's unusual. What are the odds of that happening?
Slim to none. Right, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I tell you guys, we're almost at the top of the hour here. It's very close. Before we let you guys go, please give the website out to everybody, and I'll tap it in the chat room, too. Or any other website you got, too.
The one we're promoting the books through at www.bayousavage.com. The books are available through Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, and booksellers. Is it booksellers?
Borders.
Big Borders, that's what it was, not booksellers.
Also, Jeremiah, before we hang up, we really would love somebody out there that has any kind of artistic talent. The book's just, it's meant for some type of graphics. If we could just have anybody that's any type of artist draw, if they can just kind of glance through the book and just look at a guitar player fighting a ghost, about a 10-foot. Chase, how would you describe the Magi?
Oh, Lord. We did describe him. I mean, he floats 10 feet off the ground, but he's huge. He's almost like the size of an obelisk in the middle of Pax Square. I mean, he's a big dude. But
like a
flowing
cowboy.
Robes and a scimitar sword. Very, very dark. We do. This book lends itself to a graphic novelist, and if there's anybody out there that would care to participate, there's ways to contact us on the Bayou Savage website, and we'd be very happy to talk to you about that and see if we can incorporate some of your artistic talents with ours and maybe create a comic book character that would gain the interest of somebody like Marvel. Or maybe Robert Rodriguez. If you're listening, buddy, this is a movie for you because it's got guitars and it's got special effects that'll make you very happy.
Yeah, I was thinking that today. Picturing this as a movie, and I thought, you know, the soundtrack, number one, would be great. You throw some Zeppelin, Hendrix in there. Soundtrack itself might outsell the movie, you know, to be quite honest. We know a lot of people do some artwork and stuff, so
right.
Yeah, that would be great if some people do that. And someone was asking in the chat room, do you guys offer signed copies?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, can they get that right off the website?
Two.
What's that?
I said we also respond to all emails. If anybody emails us about the books, we both take the time, and we love that people actually respond, and we do respond back to emails. It's not like one of the things you get blown off. We actually care that people care enough to write us.
Right, you know, we do respond to the public inquiries that we might get. Anybody that wants to participate in a graphic depiction of anything that they hear or read in either one of the books that are published right now, we will be very happy to entertain your thoughts, your art, and incorporate them into the books as they progress.
Yes.
So all three books are published.
Two books are published. The third one is in writing.
So the third one's in writing. Now, is it? Can you pre-order it on the site, or just the first two right now?
Well, we best not go to the third one. It takes an awful long time to get these things out, and that is my fault. Mea culpa.
Oh man. Well, I tell you what, guys, I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this and giving me the opportunity. You know, I really want to read it, too, because, again, I'm a reading kind of person.
Yeah, we'll get you a copy in the morning.
it's great to listen, but, there's something different about actually sitting down and reading it.
Well, the reason we actually put this on audio, and that was kind of an idea that we had, because Razor is going through a time in his life right now where it's really hard for him to read because of his advancing years. And we wanted him to be able to hear this at least. And that is why we put it on tape, or on disc, I should say.
Right.
Is in order for those folks that just don't have the eyesight anymore to read the written word, we want them to be able to at least hear the story of Bayou and understand the trials and tribulations of being the son of a commanding father and being responsible for the preservation of mankind. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, again, Chase, Dean, I appreciate it so much for coming on. Yeah, it goes by quick, don't it?
Yeah, it does. I just looked at the clock and I went, dang, go.
Hey,
Jeremiah, if I make one last teaser. In book two, Bayou Savage takes on the ghost of Hendrix Buchanan. So in book two, you take on the best guitar player that ever lived, which would be a combination of Jimi Hendrix and Roy Buchanan, and Bayou actually gets in, and it's the ghost of this Hendrix Buchanan character that comes on, and Bayou has to fight him, and he knows he's outmatched. So it's kind of a teaser for book two. I think that's one of the coolest scenes in book two.
And you get to learn more about everybody that you find, that you are introduced to in book one, the folks that just become part of the whole story get developed in book two as well. You learn more about them.
Well, I will definitely look forward to that one as well. So, guys, I really appreciate it. www.bayousavage.com. Anybody has any trouble spelling that? BAYOUSAVAGE. If you have any trouble beyond that, if you go to our website, we have got a biography for Dean and Chase on our website, which has links to the books and the website as well. And after this show, we'll have a whole full show page up, which will kind of summarize the show, and they have links off of it too. So, guys, I really, really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun, and hopefully we'll have you back on again sometime, talk about book two, and once book three comes out, all that. So
we'll look forward to that, Jeremiah. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, was you saying something there, Dean? I'm sorry.
I was just saying thank you so much for your hospitality and allow us to come on your site.
Well, you are more than welcome, and again, I look forward to having you guys back on. So, Dean, don't hang up. Stay on the line with us, though, okay?
Sure.
All right, everybody, we're going to be back in just a moment. Take a quick little break. And as a matter of fact, these next couple tracks we're going to play here is from the soundtrack of Bayou Savage. So you can hear
these
a little
are
bit.
All written by Dean Russell.
Oh, there we go. So these are by Dean. So we're going to hear a little bit of your music there, Dean. And when we come back, we're going to play the Shadows Throwdown, which most of you know as the Paranormal Throwdown. We have changed it up a little bit. We're going to broaden the questions out a lot more. So we'll give out the call-in number when we get ready to come back, get some people on the line. And if you don't know how it works, we'll explain it, and you might be a little shocked. Let me just put it this way. If you don't like being told, you might just be a little stupid. I wouldn't call in. Let's just put it that way. you'll get the gist of the Shadow Throwdown once it gets going. So we'll be back in a moment. So just hang tight. Well, welcome back, everybody, and thank you so much for Dean and Chase joining us there to talk about their science fiction book series there, Bayou Savage Guitar Ghost Fighter. So if you want to check that out, just go to www.bayousavage.com. And I tell you, I did the audiobook, and I've really enjoyed it. I mean, there's a little bit of everything there, and I think a lot of people can relate to some of the characters. Again, Razor is my favorite. He's just that kind of no BS kind of guy. But it is time for the Paranormal Throwdown. Actually, no, I'm sorry. It's the Shadows Throwdown. and for those who may not be familiar with this, well, you're about to be familiar with it. So what we've got to do, we're going to throw out the call-in number for our show here. And we need two people, just two. And you are going to be, let me give you the rules before we give out the call-in number. It's pretty simple. What we're going to do, we're going to get two contestants on the line. Hopefully, we'll get two contestants on the line. And we'll be asked just a series of questions. You'll buzz in with your name, and you'll answer the question. If you get the question right, you get a point. If you get it wrong, then nothing. And quite honestly, I might make up the rules as we go along. You can talk some trash during the show if you wish. So if you might, you know, if you tend to get your feelings hurt, maybe not the best, you know, not the maybe this isn't what you call in on. But you'll get it. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, we're kind of changing it up a little bit. Again, don't forget, do vote on Talking Thoughts. That's coming up at 10:45. So that's simple to do. SITDradio.com. You'll see the Talking Thoughts at the bottom there. All right. So let's open up the phone lines. The number to call in if you want to take part in the Shadows Throwdown. And this is open to anybody, whether you are just a listener or if you're directly involved with Shadows in the Dark, which we kind of see everybody is directly involved. Whatever the case may be, this is open to anybody. The questions do not necessarily all relate to the paranormal anymore. We can ask you an entertainment question. We can ask you a question about a book. We can ask you a question about a president. Who knows what we might ask from this point on. But that call-in number is 877-832-2130. Again, that is 877-832-2130. And I just put it in the chat room as well. So what we need is two contestants, two people. So let's hope we get some call-ins. So we see quite a few people in the chat room. We should be able to get at least two, right? And again, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter who you are. You know, you could be locked up in prison. As long as you got access to a phone and the show, then you are more than welcome to call in. That number again is 877-832-2130. So, you know, a lot of times we have trouble getting contestants for the show. You know, we even have trouble getting call-ins. So let's hope we see that change around a little bit here. And while we wait for a couple people to call in, of course, you know, there is that delay through the live stream and what I'm actually saying. But, you know, I want to remind everybody, check out the new website, www.sitdradio.com, because I tell you, man, there was a lot of work that went into that. And I try not to be a conceited person, but I love the website. I think it turned out just fantastic. I think it turned out a lot better than what I expected. And again, thank you, Amanda, for all your hard work in that. There still is some work to be done to it, but it is 1,000 times better than the site that we had up. We've got a lot of feedback from the website, and a lot of people seem to really like it and like where we took it. Also, there is a feedback form on there. So, hey, you want to take the time to tell us what you think, then you know what? Please, please do, because we would really appreciate it. I mean, a lot of what we do here at Shadows in the Dark is based on what our listeners say, what they tell us their opinions are, their thoughts, whatever the case may be. So please, you know, fill out our feedback form. Check it out. Check out what we've got going on. All right, again, that number is 877-832-2130. We've got plenty of people, so call in. I tell you what, I've had a lot of fun today. This has been a good day, I have to say. This whole week's been great. For those who are even thinking about it, who maybe put up the thought, a lot of our stuff that we have going on, I tell you what, has taken a turn for the good, and we are moving in a positive direction, and we are moving there a lot quicker than we have in the past, and it feels so good. We're getting so close to getting the magazine back out. The new website's up. A lot of new guests coming up. The whole nine yards. So I tell you, awesome. Which, by the way, for someone who might be on Skype, if you are on Skype, then you can call us. Use Shadows in the Dark Radio. It's all one word. Shadows in the Dark Radio. You can call us on Skype. Doesn't have to be the toll-free number. I apologize. I always forget we can use that. So you can call either 877-832-2130, or you can Skype us at Shadows in the Dark Radio. That is all one word. So 877-832-2130, or Skype, Shadows in the Dark Radio. That's Shadows, I-N-T-H-E, Dark Radio. That is all one word. So let's see if we get us a couple people here. I tell you what we're going to do in the meantime while we wait for that. I'm going to throw in just a little bit of music. Let's see. What do we want to hear? I don't know. Anybody got any? We've got a request. So let's do that right fast, and we'll be right back. All right, everybody, we are back, and we have our two contestants. So it is time to play. And hopefully you guys will want to play after we get done with this. You might be a little scared. hopefully not. But we have Pam and Rob on with us. So how you guys doing?
I'm wonderful.
I am awesome.
All right. So
there you go.
Here are the rules. It's pretty simple. We're just going to ask some questions. It's like a quiz show. Now you buzz in with your name. So Pam, Rob. So if you know, whoever buzzes in first, gets to answer the question. If they miss the question, the other person does have an opportunity to answer that question. If both people get it wrong, then we just move on. You get a point for every question. You could possibly have points taken away if you give a really dumb answer. You might get a half a point. For effort, you just don't know. We kind of make the rules up as we go every time. The big thing is you can talk trash. Most of the time, we're pretty respectful people on this show, but you can talk trash during this. Now, I will probably end up being the most trash talker of them all.
Oh, great!
But that's okay. I won't call you anything really bad, but I'll at least pick on you if you really give a crazy answer.
Just remember, we know where you live.
That's true. I will have to. No. The big thing is just have some fun. These questions can range from anything. It could be the paranormal. It could be entertainment. It could be television. It could be music. Nobody really knows. It used to be all paranormal, but I've decided to broaden it out a little bit. So you guys ready for this? You kind of understand what's going on?
No, go ahead.
No, but go ahead. What about you, Pam? How about you?
I think I'm kind of got it.
All right.
Whatever I just said.
All right, so let me write your names down. So we have Pam and Rob for tonight's Shadows Throwdown. Oh, this is going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, that's right. By the way, Moonchild saying in the chat room, if one of the contestants get behind by a lot of points, you may end up getting some pity points just to kind of get you a little closer.
I like that.
Yeah, we try to play fair, but we also poke fun at you while we play fair. All right, so here is the first one. Let's see. Well, I don't want to start off too hard. Let me move away from that. Okay, here we go. On what TV show did comic Robin Williams first appear as the alien?
Pam.
Oh, Pam.
Mork and Mindy.
All right, let's see. Is it Mork and Mindy? You are wrong.
I am wrong?
You are wrong.
Interesting.
Yeah, we threw a curveball.
It was Happy Days.
Happy Days, look at that.
That's right.
Yes, he was in a dream of Richie Cunningham's.
I'm so bad, I smell bad.
Wow. Happy Days. That was good, Rob. There's nothing smart I can say about that.
All right, so now there's curves. All right.
You guys got to at least give me some material here. All right. All right, Rob out to a quick lead. Have we ever had a lead that quick on this quiz show? I don't think we have. Usually it took like 20 questions before somebody finally got a point. I'm going to be thrown completely off my game here.
I get two prizes.
Yeah, that's right. You really want
and
that
one
book.
One of them is food, I hope.
You get two autographs.
That's right. Which, by the way, please, no Googling. We can't stop you, but no Googling. Or Yahooing, or Binging, or whatever other freaking search engines are out there. Okay, here we go.
Hey, wait. Before we... Yeah. What's my name again? I forgot.
What's what?
Oh, Rob.
It's Pam.
That's right.
It's Pam. No.
Yes.
It's Pam? Okay.
Yeah, it's Pam. You're going by Pam. Pam, yours is Jeremiah.
Okay.
All right. Who invented the power lawnmower? Who invented the power lawnmower?
Ravi.
Okay.
Briggs & Stratton.
Nope, not Briggs & Stratton. Pam, would you like to buzz in?
Mr. Moore. Pam, Mr. Moore.
Mr. Moore. Who is Mr. Moore?
Mower, you know.
Oh, Mower.
Yeah. Stupid question. You want a stupid question?
Mr. Moore.
Mr. Walk Behind.
Yeah. Mr. Push Mower. No, it was actually car maker Ransom E. Olds, who, of course, Oldsmobile. And he made that in 1915. I'm surprised you guys didn't know that. You know, the Oldsmobile. Oldsmobile, lawnmower.
How would we know that?
There's a connection there.
It's starting out to be a bad day.
So no points, no points. All right, here we go. Next question. Let's see. Let me find something good here. no, we won't do that one. I'm trying to give you some easy ones. How about a sports question? You want a sports question?
Oh yeah, he has a guy in the chat room, and he says, "Let's do a sports question." Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. What is the maximum weight permitted for a bowling ball? Maximum weight permitted for a bowling ball.
Robbie.
Pam.
Oh, Robbie is in first.
Okay.
16 pounds.
16 pounds. Wow, that is correct.
No way.
That is correct. That was a good shot in the dark.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, let's give an update on the score. That is Rob at 2 and Pam. Yes, you do have 0.
Yes, woo-hoo. 0 for me.
You are doing good, Pam.
Show you right.
I know.
All right. Next one. Here we go. This is a little bit more paranormal related. All right. Captain Bugface said 200 pounds in the chat room, by the way. How would you roll a bowling ball like that? Okay, here it is. Where did the divining board game Ouija get its name? How did the Ouija board get its name? Ouija. 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Was it from India?
No,
I'm just asking.
It is it's from the French and German words for yes. So it's actually two words combined together. We and ya.
I didn't know that. And I make Ouija boards.
You make
is
Ouija
right?
boards?
When yes, I do.
Now when you make a Ouija board, you'll be able to actually tell us. Do you know where the name Ouija comes from? And you can share that information and look really intelligent.
That's a pretty awesome fact. I didn't know that.
But please,
just made it up.
Yeah, if you do that, please credit Shadows in the Dark where you learned about that. Please, we would appreciate that. You know, a tattoo of our logo on your forehead, if you wish. Whatever, it's up to you.
There's such a killer echo going on.
Oh, you got an echo going on? I don't hear it.
Well, it's like just a delay, but it's I could say a whole phrase and then the whole phrase will play.
Oh wow. That's not, you don't have your speakers on, do you?
No, I do not.
Okay, so it's through the Skype. Good old Skype. Gotta love it.
It's not like an echo. It's a serious delay. It's like a...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's like a 10-second delay almost.
All right, stop eating up the time, you two guys.
I know.
Come on. I know what's going on.
If you get the answer correct, Robbie, that doesn't mean you get double points just because you hear you say the correct answer again.
Twice.
Yeah. Just want to make sure that's, you know, understood. All right, next question. What was Johnny Carson's famous reply when a reporter asked what he would like his epitaph to be? Johnny Carson's famous reply when asked by a reporter what he would like his epitaph to be. Johnny Carson, come on now.
Mm.
I know some of us are from that era.
Here's Johnny.
No, not here's Johnny. You forgot to ring in. You better watch it. I'll take a point off next
no,
time.
No, my name
do
is
that.
Johnny.
Oh. you changing your name or are you giving an answer again?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking to somebody else there.
All right, Pam, you got an answer?
Nope.
You guys are kicking some tail. It was, I'll be right back.
No, I didn't.
I'll
know
be
that.
Right back.
I was afraid to guess, and I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah. All right. We're doing good. The score right now is, Pam, you still have zero,
mm-hmm.
which is what you started with. So that's not bad.
No, and, I'm staying,
yeah.
staying even.
On the phone.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with consistency. Robbie, you have 2 points.
And is that good?
Yeah, and apparently talking to somebody else besides us.
Yeah, somebody took my bank card to withdraw some money, and it started to take my card.
Oh, I'll return that in about 30 minutes.
Don't tell
then.
Him I did that.
Yes.
It's all good. Everything's okay. Fine.
All right. Well, that's good. Hopefully you have a lot of money because I've got that too. All
did
right.
somebody get a point just now?
No, they
yeah,
didn't.
Me.
Yeah. Yeah. Pam got like that's 5 points in that one question.
Uh-huh.
That's fine. She's a lady.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a Ouija board too.
Oh.
All
right. Now it's telling me you're going to win.
You're going to win.
Going to win.
All right, next question. Next question. Oh, here's a good one. How many birthday cards does the average person receive annually? How many birthday cards does the average person receive annually?
Robbie.
All right, Robbie.
One.
No, that is wrong.
Yeah.
Man, what kind of family do you come from?
Yeah, I'm going to say five.
Five.
That's Pam says five.
Pam says five. Well, Pam is wrong.
Okay.
It is actually 8, according to...
Well, it was closer than 1, so I should get a point.
I'll give you half a point.
Okay.
Ooh.
For at least giving the impression that
I thought
more than one people care about an individual. So we got 1 point for Pam for at least saying, you know, humanity is a good species. It is 8, and that is, of course, according to who? Hallmark.
Yeah, they fixed the books.
Yeah, I think we might have to look into that. It could be a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. Make Hallmark everybody feel bad so they send out birthday cards.
Yeah.
Pam's last name is Hallmark.
Yes. My middle name's Mean. So.
All right, let's see. Let me find us another good question here. I'll try not to make it too hard. Let's see. No, that's kind of hard. I'm trying to make sure I get the questions on the level I feel you guys are at.
We don't mind if they're hard as long as we know the answers.
Do they have a
just try a hard one. What the heck?
Do they have a kindergarten section in here? I don't see one. Okay.
It's off my friends list.
All right. What? Oh, here. Okay. Here we go. What is a group of foxes called? A group of foxes. You know, a group of birds is a flock, right? Is that a flock? I don't know. I better shut up before I make a fool of myself. A group of foxes.
I am.
Yes, Pam.
Den.
No, not a den.
Ugh.
Robbie, you got it. You got an answer for that?
I will try a pack.
A pack? No, which would make sense, right? No, I'll give you that. A pack would make sense.
Someone in the chat room says it's a foxatorium.
A foxatorium. Now, a den. Now, Pam, I am curious.
Uh-huh. Is a den of foxes, a den of wolves, a den of thieves.
They live in a den.
Yeah, they live in a den. I don't think you call a pack. That's a pack.
And I'm going to get punched in my dentures.
Okay, so what is the ansor?
The ansor is a skulk.
Skulk.
A skulk.
Yes.
And you're saying a den's bad.
Yes.
A skulk.
Well, because
they're skulking around.
Well, you know what? You know why a skulk is not bad? Because it's the correct answer. You know, you can't argue with the correct answer.
Oh, yes, I can. You don't know me very well, do you?
But yeah, it is a skulk, which is interesting because I didn't know that myself. And it's skulk. So like a mix between a skunk and a hulk. So it's a skulk. So,
That was pretty good. All right, our totals right now after about 10 questions is Pam 1 and Rob 3. I mean,
thought
one,
I only
two,
had a half.
Two,
but
two.
You said 1, so then that means I got 1.
Oh, man.
Made a mistake.
I slipped up. All right, here we go. How about a movie question? You guys go, you guys watch a lot of movies?
Go ahead, shoot.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Who provided Mickey Mouse's high-pitched voice in the early Walt Disney film starring the animated mouse?
Pam.
Pam.
It was Disney himself.
It was. It was Disney himself. Walt Disney actually did the voices himself. Wow, nice. I wish I had a smart remark for that, but I don't. All right, we are tied. It is neck and neck. Pam with 2, Rob with 2. It is getting heated in here. Oh, watch out, watch out. Let's see.
I know. That didn't sound right.
No, it didn't. I wasn't going to comment on that one, but it was good for me if it was for you.
Shut up, Michael.
All right, here we go. Let's got another question here. What movie's cast included 124 midgets?
Robbie? The Wizard of Oz.
Yes, that is good.
That
was an easy one.
Well, I was torn. I wasn't sure if it was that or the Oompa Loompa things, because I didn't see the last one. So.
Oh,
there was only
yeah.
5 or 10 in that movie.
Yeah, that's right. And I think
I didn't see the last one, so I didn't know if they made a gazillion of them or not. Okay.
No, they didn't.
I thought
yes,
it might
it
have
is.
Been Jackass, the movie.
That would have been a good one. Yes, it was the 1939 version of The Wizard of Oz starring Judy Garland, and, of course, the midgets were the Munchkins. Should I say little
Have you
people,
ever seen
though?
The Wizard of Oz put to Pink Floyd? Over the Dark Side of the Moon?
Oh, yes, of course. Some good stuff.
You get a prize.
All right, here we go.
Go ahead, shoot.
I think that was actually one of our questions in a past Throwdown show.
Yeah. I get extra points for that.
No, you don't. I'm sorry. It was a good try, though. You know, so it's good to be the host. Here we go. Next question. Maybe. No. Yes. No. Okay.
Do it.
All right.
Just do it.
In film and advertising slang, what does the letters SFX represent?
Robbie.
Pam.
Ooh, Robbie beat you. Robbie beat you.
Okay.
Because
I heard my voice first. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Robbie? That's close. There is a sound in there.
Sound effects.
Sound effects is correct. Sound effects. But Pam, you were wanting to jump all over that one, I know. I am so sorry, but he beat you with like a raw.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just a raw.
Like you said, there's that lag time. Go ahead.
Well, there's a lag time on the live stream, but not us. It was a good try to make an excuse there, but it's not working. whatever you say. All right. Okay, let's go to a different category here. How about music? How you guys with music?
Oh, now I'm really dead.
Oh, okay. Here's you another slang one. In disc jockey slang, what is a lunar rotation? In disc jockey slang, not
Robbie.
Paranormal slang. Robbie, did you buzz in there? Okay, yes. What is that?
A midnight shift?
No, it is not a midnight shift. That's a good guess, though. That is a really good guess.
Thank you very much.
I would give you a half a point for it, but not. Pam, how about yourself?
24-hour show?
24-hour show. No. A lunar rotation is actually an infrequently played record. An infrequently played record is a lunar rotation. Yeah, that's what I say. That's all right.
Interesting.
I don't have anything smart for that one. I just got smarter myself, to be honest. Okay. Ooh, here we go. Who's a Beatles fan? Well, then I'm really asking this question. What inspired John, Paul, George, and Ringo? That you do realize that is the Beatles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What inspired John, Paul, George, and Ringo to call themselves the Beatles?
Pam.
Pam.
Drugs.
Drugs is a really good answer. I am going to give you a point on that one, because yeah, it would make sense. But no, it wasn't drugs.
I didn't think it was, but whatever.
That was a good answer, Robbie. How about yourself?
I think I know it, but I can't. It's on the tip of my tongue, but I don't have a mirror.
Bite it.
Yeah. Can you stick your tongue out and look? Look, stick your tongue out. Let me look. No, that's the wrong answer.
It has something to do with where they used to play all the time.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't. That was a good try.
You lose 2 points.
I'll take a 2 point.
Oh, he's arguing. He's arguing with the DJ. He loses a point.
I know. You better watch it. I just took the B off of your name. Just let that be a warning. So now it's just Raw. All right. So it was Buddy Holly's group, the Crickets. The Beat spelling was intended as a musical pun.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So Beat.
Huh?
Yeah. What's your burrito?
Yeah, there you go. See, you know, people don't realize how much smarter you can get on Shadows in the Dark.
This is right. They still don't.
And then how much, you know, we poke fun at you for being smarter than us. All right. Let's see. How about, the world. How about, we'll go back to sports. Arts, comics, and literature. That's where we're going. All right. We won't do that one.
I knew the answer to that one, too.
I bet you did. I'm probably, like, skipping all the ones you know the answer to. All right. Here we go. The name of what Texas town came close to being changed in the late 50s because of a controversial best-selling novel? The name came close to being changed in the late 1950s. Because of a controversial best-selling novel.
How in the heck would we know that one?
Yeah. So there was a novel in the 50s that was controversial. Anybody know that one? No?
Uh-uh, I'm not saying nothing.
All right. The answer is Lolita. Yeah, I've read that book a million times.
Well, there you go. I'm still learning how to read.
Yes, the novel was Lolita by Vladimir whatever his last name is.
If you would have had his name pronounced right, I would have known who it was.
It says, after much debate, the citizens of the small southeast Texas town decided to keep the name adopted by their forefathers in honor of early settler Lolita Reese. So they said, no, we're not changing our name.
For crying out loud.
Yeah.
I thought Lolita had something to do with porn.
I don't know if it does.
I thought she was in a play. I thought she had something to do with baseball players in the play. Remember? No? Okay, never mind.
No, I don't. No, I'm sorry. You're in your own world there.
Yes, I remember. I had lasagna.
Lasagna.
Don't make her feel better, Rob. Just let her just stay in her own world.
What's the name of that play?
Don't knock on the
glass. You guys know that.
Don't feed the monkeys. Let's see. Next question. What are the three one-eyed face cards in a... There's a typo.
Pam.
Okay, Pam.
Okay, let's see. It's the Jack, Queen, and King. No?
Well, you got to be specific. The King of, the Jack of...
Oh, it's different? Let me think.
Yeah, they only got
spades.
Okay.
Spades.
Is that, so you're saying spades on all of them?
Yeah, I'm saying spades on all of them.
Yeah, no, you're wrong. Yeah,
well, I guessed.
That was good. That was a good try. Robbie, I'm sorry, it is Raw now. Raw?
What?
We're going to buy that, too.
Go ahead. I'd rather just not know instead of be wrong.
Okay, it is. It is. The King of Diamonds. The Jack of Spades, and the Jack of Hearts.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you never played poker with one-eyed jacks. While
who wants to know that?
And somebody saying, "Look, somebody saying, what suit is the Suicide King?" If I'm not mistaken, the Suicide King is the King of Hearts, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, is he mistaken? Captain Bugface, is he mistaken?
Yeah, let me know there, old Bugface. If I am wrong, I will give Pam and Robbie both a point. And don't say I'm wrong, because I've got a deck of cards here somewhere.
Say he's half wrong, and I get a point. I don't know how you could be half wrong, but we'll find a way.
I think a better question is, how does he get his name, Bugface?
Because he's
have you seen his picture?
Yeah, he looks like a bug. He's like some kind of freaky laboratory accident.
Riding his motorcycle too many times at night.
Exactly. So no, nobody was saying.
He once bought a pack of cards. Okay, now okay, back to the game.
Okay, we'll wait to see if he replies. Here we go. Next question. Let's see. Sports, and we'll move from sports. Oh, by the way, there was a typo in that question. It actually said in a desk of cards. I thought that was funny.
Well, no wonder I got it wrong.
I know. If I would have said a desk of cards, you would have been like, yeah, I don't have a deck of cards, but I've got a desk of cards.
No, I am dyslexic, though, so that would have helped.
It probably would have.
Would have looked
right. So if you're dyslexic, do I need to read backwards?
Huh?
Will that help you?
Well, it might.
Okay.
Can you read it backwards? That's the question.
Well, let's see here. All right, so here's the next question. Confederacy, thee for many how. Union, thee for false states, many how. War civil, the Doring.
Read it right.
Oh.
Crazy head.
Oh, okay.
Crazy head.
I thought that might help. Anybody got an answer for that? No? No? Okay, I'll read the question again. During the Civil War, how many states fought for the Union, and how many states fought for the Confederacy? That's a tough one. Did they ever teach us that in school? All I was told was South bad, North good.
Why don't you give us a hint? How many states were involved in the Civil War?
Okay, I'll give you a hint there. There was 34 is the total number.
Robbie.
All right, Robbie.
15 and...
Do the math, hurry. Got a calculator? Go. It's 5. 15
and the rest of them.
No, that is incorrect. Pam, do you have an answer?
No.
The Union.
I know it was more for the Union.
Yes, the Union had 23, and the Confederacy had 11. Oh, no wonder.
Shame
on
us.
No wonder the South got their butt beat. They were outnumbered 1-2.
Well, not only that, they didn't have a railroad that worked.
Man,
and some of those states were giant.
I think we're gonna have to redo the Civil War on fair numbers. Yes, look, it was the King of Hearts. Thank you very much.
So you get a signed copy.
Yes, I win it. And which, by the way, we are... Here is the score right now. Pam, you have 3. And Ra, you have 4. And, wow, that's not bad. So what, 7 out of about 30 questions? You guys are kicking some butt.
30 questions.
All right, here we go. Next question. Let me find a good one here. Let me find an easy one, because I think this
keep
what we
saying.
Need.
Let me find a good one. Let me find an easy one.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna find some really easy ones if we're gonna get some points on the board. Let's see. I'm looking. I'm flipping. I'm looking. Which, by the way, everybody, yes, our next hour guest is going to be here with us as Andre Vidimus. He's going to be talking about chaos magic. So that's going to be the next hour here in about 10 minutes or so. Which, you know what, we completely forgot about talking thoughts. You know that? Why'd you guys let me forget about that?
I don't know.
That's kind of rude.
You're the host.
Have so much fun.
Oh, I tell you what, we'll finish this out and we'll get Andre Vidimus to jump on Talking Thoughts with us. We'll see if he wants to. We'll open up with Talking Thoughts next hour because I'm having too much fun here. Okay, here we go. This was a good one. I like this one. All right, what is Wagger? Pagger, bagger, slang for in England. Oh, that sounds dirty. And it's not dirty, by the way. I'll give you a hint. It is not dirty. So it's wagger, pagger, bagger. And that's spelled W-A-G-G-E-R, P-A-G-G-E-R, B-A-G-G-E-R. Wagger, pagger, bagger.
I'll try this one.
All right, Raw.
This is what they, the process they went through, or the person that... They got all the ship hands to work on the ships.
No. Pam, I'm going to give you a hint, Pam.
No, I'm sorry. Okay. It wasn't that?
No. What? It's a lot simpler answer than that.
Wagger, Pagger.
Wagger, well, Pagger, Bagger.
I don't know. Guy that packs the groceries.
No, you were getting a little closer there, though. It is actually a waste paper basket. It's a trash can.
I was going to say that.
Yeah. Oh, now everybody. Oh, yeah. I don't know why I didn't think of that before.
What do they call that? The dustbin is the trash collector. The dustbin something. So, okay. All right.
Yeah, I would just stomp on your head.
Yeah.
Which actually you're behind.
I was going to say it was a British pimp.
A British pimp. That would have made sense, yes. I got to go.
Wag her, tag her, and bag her.
Yes. That would make.
That's so much easier than saying trash can, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I don't see why we should adopt that around, you know, here. As a matter of fact, I'm going to call like a googly boogly pagger wagger chip chop dop dop. That's trash can slang for.
You said googly.
I did. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, you need to stop while you're ahead, too. Here you go.
I'm trying to find an easy one.
Go with music.
All right, we're going.
No, that's not fair.
What?
Be unfair.
I know it's not fair because I'm always reading your stuff on there. Oh, that's the best song ever. That was made in 1933. I'm sitting here going, this guy knows his music.
33. Oh, did they have music in 33?
You know it, man. Music's been around since man popped out of the sky or came up from the ground or appeared out of nowhere or whatever. All right. What American city was founded in 1733 as a haven for British debtors, people that owed money?
Pam.
Pam.
Oh, I know I'm wrong. It was Sydney, Australia.
Rob, I'm going to read the question for you. Pam, pay attention. What American city? I'm going to repeat that again. What American city was founded in 1733 as a haven for British debtors? Oh, that was good. Sydney, Australia. That was close. That was close. If you were only
Boston.
In America. Boston?
Boston.
No, it wasn't Boston. It was Savannah, Georgia.
Yeah, that was close.
It was Savannah, Georgia. Pam, you are at 2.5 points. Yes, I did take away.
Oh, you took a half a point.
Yeah, I took away a half a point for the Sydney, Australia
answer.
You didn't
take a half a point away from him for dock worker guy?
Well,
with Wagger, Spragger, Becker.
Well, you know, I have to say, I did clearly say American City.
And, I know you did. It's my fault.
You know, here's the thing. If you would have just stuck with Sydney, you might have got away with it. But you had to throw the Australia in there with it.
Well, I just wanted to say Australia, and then I said, no, City. So I did catch City.
Yeah, if you would have just left Australia, it would probably been a whole nother game.
If I would have just not Skyped in, I would have been much better off. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, they probably would have, too. that was funny. What American city. Sydney, Australia. Okay, here we go. What jelly bean flavors were Ronald Reagan's favorite? What jelly bean flavors were Ronald Reagan's favorites?
Jeez.
Most stupid, obscure questions.
That's not obscure. Everybody knew about his jelly.
Yeah, but we didn't know what flavor he liked.
He had a big speech on it.
Oh, a big speech?
It was a big, big speech. It was huge. I mean, like CNN covered it, C-SPAN, everybody covered it, and he just
Fox.
Talked about his jelly bean flavors. Actually, I'm lying out of my teeth.
Yes, I know you are. But go ahead.
Okay. Does anybody want
to
ring in?
It's all in.
Jelly bean flavors. Ronald Reagan's favorites. There's two of them. I'll give you that hint.
So if we get one of the two?
I'll give you half a point.
Okay, Pam.
Pam.
Licorice.
Licorice is correct. That's a half a point.
So I get to guess for the other one?
Go ahead, throw a guess in.
Orange.
Orange, no. Did it make orange? Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
You're back up to three. Robbie? Can you guess the other one?
Blueberry.
Blueberry. No, blueberry. Do they make blueberry jelly beans? I guess they probably do. It was coconut.
Coconut.
Yes. See, look, but Captain Bugface. He says he kept jelly beans in a jar on his desk. Yes, that is common knowledge for the for most Americans, except for apparently the two we have.
I got
on the
one.
Show. You did. You did. I'll give you that. So you,
cheater.
So you got 3 points. Pam, you have 3. Rob, you have 4. And we only got a few minutes left here.
Cheater.
I know. I did. I'm Googling. I'm Googling jelly beans.
Googly beans.
All right. Here we go.
Cheater.
All right. What is a horse called before it reaches age 1 and becomes a yearling?
Pam.
Robbie.
Oh, Pam got you. What is it?
I got you that time. It's a foal.
No.
Robbie.
Oh, come on.
Robbie.
A colt.
No. No, it's a weanling.
Robbie.
Robbie, yes.
A weanling. I had horses. I never called them a weanling.
It remains a weanling until its first birthday.
It's one of those horses that you find on a British ship while it eats jelly beans.
Yes, and it tries to throw
on
paper
the
in
Australia.
The wagger, pagger, bagger.
Forget about it.
All right, here we go. Okay, let me see. I'm looking through the movie ones. I'm trying to find you guys a good easy movie one because
music.
Music. Didn't we do music a second ago?
It's the music if he wants music.
All right. I'm going to music. I'm going to music.
Then I can scream foul and I get an autographed book, too.
That's true. Music.
You said that's true.
But I can change the rules, though. Don't forget that, too.
Cheater.
Cheater.
where did the music section go? I think somebody took it out of the book.
There never was one.
Did I not say we had music a little while ago?
What do you call
music
a flock
in theater?
Of horse?
Here it goes. Here we go. Here we go. All right. Let's see. I'm trying to find some you guys might actually have a fit over. No, we already done the Beatles. No, there's another Beatles question. No, I think that's too hard for you guys.
Jeez.
Is that an insult? Yes.
No, it wasn't.
Thank
it's
you.
The throwdown. All right. Who the heck are those people? I didn't even know who those people are.
Well, then we probably would have. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll give it to you.
No.
Okay, I won't give it to you then. No, not that one. All right, okay, here we go. What was the first performer to sell over 500,000 copies on... What the heck?
I'm reading what Bugface wrote.
No, it is not, Bugface. Yeah, that's it. I'm changing the question. How much did RCA Records pay Sun Records for Elvis Presley's contract in 1955? How much did RCA pay Sun Records
Pam.
For Elvis's contract? Pam?
$10,000.
Ooh, no, it wasn't $10,000.
Robbie?
$200,000. 1955. Right, 1955?
$5,000.
$35,000. $40,000 if you add the $5,000 bonus. So,
cheater.
Yeah, wow. $200,000, huh? All right. This is one more. Okay, one more question. Pam, if you get it, you tie it. If you don't get it, then Robbie wins. All right. Pam, I will let you pick the category. All right, you can choose arts, comics,
what categories
literature.
Do we have?
Well, that's what I'm telling you. If you be patient,
okay.
Let me speak.
No, I can't be. What?
All right, arts, comic, and literature, sports and games, war in the military, television, radio, business, advertising, and inventions, religion, the Bible, and mythology, America, past and present. We already determined you guys aren't too good at that one. The world.
Hey,
I'm going to take America.
America, past and present.
Mm-hmm.
All right. America, past and present. Can't believe they called my book dumbass questions. Okay. I'm gonna try to find something here.
He's still flipping through. Yeah, he's flipping through. This is probably the hardest question I could possibly
Oh, that's a good one. What? Okay, two states bill themselves as the Sunshine State. Can you name them?
Robbie.
Well, I thought I got the answer.
No, you got to pick the category. You still had to buzz in.
Okay, go ahead, Robbie. That's what I was
Florida and do I have to name them both?
Yeah, that would probably be, can you name them? Would kind of be what that question implies.
I will pick Florida, and I will wait for somebody in the chat room to type the answer.
Not going to happen. If you use the chat room, you're disqualified.
I will pick Florida and Georgia.
No, Florida and Georgia is wrong. Florida is correct, but Georgia is wrong.
Yes, Florida is correct.
Hey, you didn't have to say that, cheater.
I was thinking Georgia too, so now I'm lost.
Okay, Pam, here's your chance. Here's your chance.
To
tie it up.
Oh, okay. No, that's the land of enchantment. Okay, I'll say Hawaii.
Hawaii. That's a good answer, but that is completely wrong. Yes. All right. The answer is Florida and South Dakota.
South Dakota?
Now, that's just weird.
Your guess is as good
as
mine.
That's just wrong on so many levels.
It is. I don't see them as being very sunshiny. I've been there. But, all right. Well, Robbie, well, you have won the audio version of Bayou Savage, Guitar Ghost Fighter, The Resurrection by Dean Russell and Chase Walker. And I am sure we'll get at least Chase to sign that. I don't know if Dean has signed it.
Well, what do I get?
Pam, thank you so much for playing along. We appreciate it. If I was there, I would pat you on the back.
I'm glaring at the microphone.
I can feel it. I tell you what you'll get.
How about if I get one that's not autographed?
I will give you a free look at the new Shadows in the Dark website.
To leave
you too. You know, a free look at the Shadows in the Dark website.
Oh, it's gotten quiet.
Hello?
Did you die?
No, I'm...
He's looking underneath the desk for some chewed gum.
I am. All right. So there it is.
Gum.
That is the Paranormal Throwdown. Well, guys, thank you so much for calling in and playing. I hope you had fun with it. And we didn't hurt anybody's feelings. We did own one time before. but that's all right. So
cheap show. Okay.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. Hey, if you don't win, you don't win. We're not afraid to say you're a loser. So thank you for playing along.
Right.
Did I call it the Paranormal Throwdown again? Somebody says it's not the Paranormal.
Yes, you did.
It is the Shadows Throwdown. Sorry, guys. We just renamed it. It is the Shadows Throwdown. Thank you so much, Pam and Rob, for playing. Congratulations, Rob, for winning. Pam, congratulations for losing. Somebody has to.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, guys, we'll talk to you guys later. Thank you so much.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody. We're going to take a quick little break. I'm going to get our next guest on the line. That is Andre Vitimus. We're going to be talking about some chaos magic and, of course, the talking thoughts. I kind of held that off a little bit, to be honest with you. I actually just completely forgot that it was 10:45. So we'll see if Andre is interested in tackling the talking thoughts with us, which is a little 15-minute segment about whatever you voted on over there on our website. So now, if you want to, you can still get that vote in there. Just go to sitdradio.com. And click on the Talking Thoughts down at the bottom and cast your vote. And when we come back from the break, we'll see where that stands and we will talk about it. So how about that? So we'll be back in just a moment with Andre Vitimus. Well, welcome back, everybody. That was a lot of fun. So thank you to Pam and Robbie for taking part in the Shadows Throwdown. Hopefully we didn't hurt any feelings. If we did, well, that's tough because that's kind of part of it. But we're going to move on here, and our next guest for tonight is Andre Vitimus. He has been on the show before to talk about chaos magic, and we are pleased to welcome him back. So, Andre, how are you, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing today?
I am doing good. Just enjoying the nice little, I guess, for you know us fathers, it's like a mini vacation, right? We can do anything we want.
I don't know about that one.
Yeah. But it's been a nice day here, in the Carolinas and whatnot. So hopefully your day's been good.
Yeah, I've been driving back and forth between states today, but it was a beautiful day to be driving, so that's awesome.
Oh, yeah, it was nice. I tell you what, Andre, it's been a while since we talked to you, and this was kind of in a way, almost a spur-of-the-moment kind of thing. We got together on Facebook there and kind of got you in on this show. What do you got going on that's new? Anything?
Well, I've been working on my next book, which is going to be called Hypnoenergetics, and part of Hypnoenergetics is what I'll be doing out in Seattle at the end of July. So, and Hypnoenergetics is a different way to do energy work that you don't really need all the old kind of dogma. So, just kind of a hands-on chaos magic part two, as it were.
Oh, right, okay. Well, good. And I tell you what, before we really get into it, I'm about to forget again, and that is, of course, Talking Thoughts. I tell you, we move so fast sometimes. So you said you want to take part in it, so let's do this. And we'll take about 10 minutes or so just to do Talking Thoughts, which is great because I think it may kind of fit right in with some of the stuff we're going to be talking about. And it looks like everybody voted on death, immortality. Which is, that's an interesting kind of thing to talk about because, death, that's something that, what's the old saying? There's only two things for sure in life, and that's death and taxes. We all have to face death at some point. And, for me, Andre, I think death, with my beliefs, I think death does not, I think it doesn't exist. Let me put it that way. That death does not even describe it. That it's the wrong word to use because I believe we do have a spiritual side, a soul that continues beyond the flesh. And if that, to me, if that's the truth, then how can you say that's death?
Well, I mean, as a voodoo priest, we of course believe that there is life after death and they can help us. And they often do help us. And right there, so there is a lot of agreement. And, if science would open its mind up a little, there's a lot of evidence suggests that ghosts might be real. It's just a matter of kind of the anti, none of this stuff is real. But if they really were following Occam's razor and actually looking at the evidence, there's a lot of evidence to suggest, hey, guess what? Something's happening out there.
Right. I have to agree. I think there is, I think if we just take the time to look around, that we might see there's so much more than just the flesh. And for me, whenever I hear the term death, that's more what I think of, death of the flesh. But that's it. Why there's immortality is kind of thrown in there with that that option that people had to vote on. And I think in essence that we are immortal, because I don't think we ever die, because the soul, the spirit is that's the engine, that's what's inside that makes everything else run. And I don't I think that the soul, the spirit is pure energy, and you can't destroy it, so it's going to live on. And I guess the big question is the consciousness live on with it? Do our thoughts, our memories continue? I think is the big question with death.
Well, think about it this way, and this is why I think it's such a question. First of all, if everyone thought about it, would they really want to be physically immortal forever and ever and ever? Most people, if they thought about it, would say no, because you would want to be able to, kind of step out of your body, not have to deal with, the tribulations of life all the time and get to a different state of being. The problem with death is, what is that state of being going to be like? And it's a lot like before you have language, your whole state of being is very different than after you can, process things in language.
Right.
I would almost say that even if there's an afterlife, the difference between living and not having the flesh might be equally as drastic between having language and not having language when you're a baby.
Right, yeah. Well, that makes sense, and I see what you're saying. I never thought of it like that. That is definitely very interesting. Now, you know, there's that beeping. Sorry about that. One of the things, I guess, even with our beliefs, even with, you know, and I would say, I'm just throwing it that. This is my opinion, that, you know, 90 to 95% of the world population believes that there is life after death in some form or fashion. If the majority, let's even leave it at that. If the majority believes that, the majority of the population, why does it seem that the majority of the population also really fears death? I mean, look at the medications we pump on ourselves. I mean, look at, when someone's on a life support system, I mean, quite frankly, they're actually dead, more or less. The only way for them to stay alive is to be hooked up to some machine. You know, why do we put ourselves through that? All kinds of medications to try to, you know, remain healthy. I mean, at a very late age, you know. I mean, see someone in their 80s or 90s, my gosh, the medication they're taking, it's literally 30 pills a day.
Well, let me ask you one question. Are you absolutely sure that you know what's after death? And if the answer is no, you've answered why people are afraid.
Yeah.
And why they would be afraid. Because most people don't absolutely know. There's some people who have claimed to have near-death experiences, and they say they absolutely know, and they don't have that fear. But for the rest of us, mm-hmm. what's going to be after, like, the body goes? And the answer is, we don't really know. At the heart of the heart, that uncertainty is really what people's afraid of.
Yeah, I agree with that. And because I can't say for myself, even though with everything that I've seen, all, you know, that I've experienced in my own life, and listening to other people recount their experiences, in which, you know, there are, you listen to those people, it's like, yeah, I definitely believe what they're saying. I feel they're telling the truth as it was to them. I still can never say for sure. You know, if I was to die at this moment, I honestly have no idea what would happen. I mean, I have my beliefs, but I have no idea.
I mean, I've had to act as a kind of a psychopomp, which is kind of a guide to the dead, a few times, and help the dying process, which is always kind of a rough ride as a, kind of a priest to have to do. Uh-huh. But, you know, it's different for each person, too. So does that mean there's something out there, or am I just helping them release? I don't even know.
Right.
You know, I don't know for sure, because it's different each time when I'm doing the journey with them as they're dying and trying to release the energy. And so is there a stock afterlife for everyone? Maybe not. Because it's different every time I have to act as a guide to somebody dying, or give the equivalent of a voodoo or magician's last rites, as it were. We don't have last rites, but just act as a guide.
Right.
And now,
What do you go through whenever you you do that with somebody? I mean, what is it like, and what do you see in that person as they kind of, you know, go through that transition, or that, you know, to that point of you know, kind of going over, passing away?
Well, in the few times I did it, they had cancer. It was a long process, and there was that moment where I'm walking them down. The person was a voodoo asant that I was acting as a psychopomp to, and I walked them through numerous crossroads, and you could tell they were realizing they didn't have any pain anymore. Until we got to the waters where I couldn't go any further.
Right.
And other guides took the other spirits kind of took them from there, because I wasn't dead, so I couldn't go any further. I could only get them to that point and walk them past. But there was actually a sense of peace. It was very sad, you know,
Right.
It was very hard for me because I knew the person, and I knew that that's not the end. I don't believe that was the end, but that I wouldn't be able to physically interact with the person anymore, right there. And I had to take them down, and I had to do my job. But there was a sense of peace from them because they didn't have the pain anymore. And they were getting taken taken by the people that needed to take them to the next stage. And I could rest assured that from within their belief system and what I got out of the experience, that they could start cleaning up what happened in the last few months of their life and the emotional pain and suffering and let it all go because of what I did. In other cases, it's kind of like, it's so trippy and surreal that I get them to the right place and I'm like, wow, I'm tripping for like hours afterwards.
All right.
You can't quite get out of like a trance state and have to really forcefully ground.
And now, what about, someone mentioned this in the chat room. I said they were making a joke about something, but it got me thinking about something else. And that's reincarnation. And that kind of ties into the whole death thing. I mean, to me, again, it's that question of if reincarnation is true, then do you really even die because you're just coming back? But then, you know, if we are reincarnated, obviously we don't have a flood of memories from, you know, our past lives. Now, in magic circles, what seems to be kind of the belief of what happens after death?
Well, that depends on which magicians you're talking to. Some are actually kind of more atheistic. You die, it's over.
Ah.
But some in ceremonial magic, and even a lot of chaos magicians, have a sense of, well, ceremonial magicians call it the holy guardian angel. In voodoo, we call it the gros bon ange. And a lot of chaos magicians refer to it as kia, but it's like this divine spark, which isn't necessarily your current personality, which is kind of like the personality might fade, but that divine inner genius is what continues to go on and experience itself in different ways, mm-hmm. through different incarnations and stuff like that.
Right. Can you explain exactly the difference between, all right, chaos, you call it chaos magic, and which is, that's also the title of your book, Chaos Magic. What is the difference of chaos magic, say, through the other, you know, magical communities or cultures, you know, dealing with like voodoo? I guess another would be, like druid magic. What is chaos magic exactly compared to something like that?
Well, see, chaos, there really isn't such a thing as chaos magic per se. It's kind of like an attitude towards magic.
Uh-huh.
Like a meta paradigm. So it's a step kind of above paradigms where you're looking at different paradigms as belief tools that you can step in. There's an axiom that we say that there may not be an ultimate truth, which means you are free to go between these different systems and experience the different systems as you want to. I mean, that doesn't mean you don't have to do work. You still have to do work. But it's kind of like when you step back and say there may not be a truth, you're kind of free to play with the universe and work with these different systems because you're not accepting anyone as more valid than any other system. It's kind of, very democratic in a way because you're saying the systems are equally valid.
Right.
Now, of course, everyone who's a serious chaos magician will have paradigms that they're very good at. For instance, I'm very good at voodoo, but I'm very good at angel work too, and I'm very good at Reiki, but those are different worldviews, and I can switch between those worldviews because I can accept that they're equally valid. And I can learn a lot about each worldview and how magic works within each worldview and then start taking a step back from all those things and have the attitude, well, what did I learn when I'm working in this system? What did I learn when I'm working in this system? How do things actually work in each of these different systems? And what's the difference between those systems? And what's similar? And how can I improve what I want to do over here based on what I learned over here? Because I learned the system well enough to see the structure of how magic works within that system.
Mm-hmm. So I make sure I understand a little bit. Right? So Chaos Magic kind of encompasses it all, in a way.
But you're
kind of accepting. So what you're saying, you're accepting all of it as being valid, true, worthwhile, and you know, even explore each, you know, each one.
Yeah, I mean, because if you've accepted that there may not be an ultimate truth, the only thing that you can talk about is the results that you get from the system that you're working with. You can't say that this is absolutely true. You have to put up. You have to put up or shut up. If it's not working, you're like, well, I didn't get any results. You can't argue this is the right way to do it. You have to say, when I did this, I got this to change in my life, or I transformed this part of myself, or I got these results, or I got this phenomenon to happen. So it's more honest about the fact that you have to justify what you're claiming with real-world results, real-world changes.
All right. Now, let's go back a little bit to what you know we were talking about right before we kind of kicked into talking thoughts there. Was you know what you've been working on, and that was, and you'll have to say that it was hypnotic.
I'm calling it hypnoenergetics.
Hypnoenergetics.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the idea there is to grossly simplify it is simply that you can use intention, breathing, and what we call energy work in certain contexts of the individual. So what I mean by that is if I was doing an energy healing, like I was trying to heal a person who happened to be a Christian, mm-hmm. I would be better able to heal that person if I vibrated an energy that was in line with what they wanted. Which means if I was using angels or I was actually using Christian magical techniques to actually do the healing as opposed to applying my own techniques there.
All right.
Even though my techniques might work, when they get that vibration inside themselves, they won't resist it and because it's in something they're familiar with. And I can do the same kind of magic that I normally would do to heal them or to do other work for them, but it's within something that their subconscious mind has already accepted, so they don't work against it.
So the subconscious really, I guess, plays a big role. I guess it comes down to belief, right?
Yeah. I mean, once you've internalized the belief, this is the one thing that chaos magic has been the most liberating for me about, is internalizing different beliefs and being able to switch between them. But for most people, once they've internalized the belief, mystical experiences, supernatural occurrences have to, in most cases, present themselves in line with that belief system they've internalized.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, it's a lot easier for a Christian to believe in demons, per se, than some other people, because they would just be like, that's ridiculous. But within certain Christian churches, that's more believable. And so things that I might interpret as, a dead spirit or something from the woods, like a nature spirit, they might interpret that as a demon because that's what their filter is.
Right. I'm just kind of really thinking about this because, you know, to me what it sounds like is a really kind of deep level of thinking about things. You're kind of, to me what it sounds is you're almost like accepting everybody's reality and becoming a part of it when you need to be a part of it. But in what they know as reality, even if that means adjusting your own.
Well, if you can switch beliefs, you should be able to switch belief to theirs.
Right.
And then work from there.
Huh. Now, and you've done this to heal people. You use a lot of this for healing. But, you know, what else falls under that? I mean, what kind of other things under chaos, the chaos magic can one do to benefit them?
Yeah, I mean, because chaos magic can work with any set of techniques or any system.
Right.
You can do almost anything from prosperity magic to clearing a house of spirits that are haunting it. You know, I've done that. Been on Paranormal Investigators, where, not the show, but
with
them, where they ask me, oh, can you come here and clean this house with us? And I'm like, okay, sure, I'll do it. I'm like, usually they pay me for that, though, but I've done that. But you can use that for that, you know. You can use that for not just healing, but to attract a new love. You know, you can use that for all kinds of things that you want to get in your life.
All right.
And yes, to answer the chat question, you can try that to help win the lotto. However, the problem is everyone else is trying to win the lottery with prayers, which is a form of magic.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So you're in a highly competitive system where everyone is canceling each other out.
As I said, I'll go 10%. Yeah, you know, I've never thought of that. That is true. I mean, if you use the magic for a specific lotto, yeah, you're not the only one using, you know, and again, I guess, you know, it's almost hard to call it magic because really we're talking about what, you know, whatever that belief is to obtain what you're looking for.
Well, see, I'm a firm believer that we could drop the word magic and many different faiths could have much more productive communications just by dropping that word and dropping the word occult. And it wouldn't be quite as sexy, but we probably could chat more and understand each other a lot more.
Well, yeah, you lose, you knock down kind of a barrier there, you know, of, I guess, accepting the other for who they are and being able to interact with that.
Exactly. And I have to say, like, just recently I was at an event, and one of the best, it was one of the best conversations I had over dinner was with a Satanist and a Catholic priest. So you had a voodoo priest, a Satanist, and a Catholic priest all sitting there eating dinner at this fine restaurant together, chatting metaphysics and philosophy. It was probably one of the best conversations I had. But to do that, we had to all kind of get over ourselves and not take ourselves too seriously.
Right. Huh. Now, I've got a question, or I guess I don't know if they're really asking a question, but we'll throw it out there. In the chat room says, you know, kind of back to the lottery. They're saying, what about if you're at a slot machine? If you put that energy into, say, a single slot machine, you're the only one sitting there playing it.
First, you have to understand a lot. People must understand a lot more about how casinos work to actually, like, understand slot machines.
Yeah, I worked in a casino and I worked on the slot machines.
Most of the slot machines, you're not dealing with one machine, but a computer network that decides when slot machines actually hit. So, now, the fact that I'm telling you this means I've thought about this and done some work on this. So you have to think about not one slot machine, but all the slot machines in the casino. And then what you might think is not necessarily, like, can I influence this one machine? Because there's a bigger computer controlling all the slot machines, deciding which one's hits. So it's better to use your intuition to figure out which machine to be at the right time.
Right. Okay, yeah. I mean, because two wouldn't be, I guess, you know, take a little bit different to, you know, messing with one machine would technically alter all of them, too.
Well, yeah, you got to remember, one machine, it looks like one machine, but it's not, because right. there's a bigger computer. And that bigger computer is doing stuff, and if you're really good at working with magic on computers, you could probably influence that bigger computer to make the one hit. But if you cast magic at the one computer, it's kind of like a slave terminal, so you're not quite... See, that's where you're not quite getting the most efficient use of magic. That's where you have to think, what is the... Sometimes it's a question of, what is the best way to do this?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Well, that makes sense.
And from my experience, the best way to do the casino thing is to have lots of servitors or thought forms around and figure out which machine is sort of going to hit at the what time.
Mm. Now, let's say you do something along those lines, and how do you interpret what either you're feeling, seeing, hearing, you know, whatever the case may be, to say, okay, that is that, okay, that's where I need to be, and not, you know, and not just slot machines, you know, that's just kind of been the example for the night, but anything else you would kind of use magic for?
Intuition is one of the harder things. I mean, a lot of people will use divination sets to help them get that, but really what the divination set is there for is to trigger things in their head to say, oh, this is sort of what's going to happen. It's kind of like a tool. In the case of the slot machines, what I did was I basically had familiars tell me this machine in 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So the last time I did that, I actually won about $700, but that was in New Orleans. So I was pretty good about that. I was pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I'll take $700.
Exactly. But you have to be ultra, like, gambling is the hardest one because you have to be super patient, right? If you're, like, and you have to not approach it like you want the money. You have to just see it kind of like, because that gets in the whole desire of result.
Right.
Like, if you want the money too bad, you're thinking about all of the ways you're going to spend the money as opposed to concentrating on the magic.
Okay,
that's
an
easy explanation. And in that case, you have to reframe your whole mindset as if there's no money involved and you're just playing a different game than the game that the casinos are giving you. Essentially, like, you're playing a game with the universe as opposed to the game of the casino and the slot machine.
Well, you got to really kind of think of it on a very deep level.
Yeah, because if you don't get away from the whole, come on, give me the money, give me the money, give me the money, give me the money, it kind of, like, you cut yourself out. You kind of hurt your chances of actually getting success there.
Huh. I would still take the $700.
I definitely, that paid for my last trip to New Orleans.
No, that's great. Now, what about in the ways of healing? You know, not only other people, what about yourself?
Well, first of all, healing yourself is always the most difficult thing
mm-hmm.
because you're always butting heads with your emotional baggage and the parts of yourself that don't want you to be healed. That might seem like, oh, everyone wants to be healed, but most sicknesses have a emotional component that people are attached to. And you have to really kind of remove yourself and really kind of work on the emotional issues while you're doing the healing. Now, with other people, because you're not attached to their issues, you can kind of use intention and trance state and different ritual symbols to cause a change in their subconscious mind, which also changes their aura. And then if you get the subconscious mind in line with your a different intention that they're going to be healed, you can get the kind of miraculous healings that will sometimes happen.
Now, what kind of healings, you know, specifically? We're talking, you know, a physical one, a mental, even spiritual, you know, some kind of spiritual healing.
Yeah, all of the above. I mean, this weekend I was in Chicago, and I was doing healings most of the weekend, and there was I was at Alchemy Arts, which is a cult store in Chicago, and I was basically doing – I did a physical healing on one of the store owners. There was two of them, and she was having problems with her neck, and they were really severe problems with her neck to the point that she had a kink nerve and her hand was going numb. So I sat her down, and first I put her into like a hypnotic trance state just so that way she wouldn't get in the way of the healing.
Right.
Because that's part of the desire of the result. If she was just sitting there consciously aware, she could consciously kind of fight against the healing.
Right.
But if you bring her into hypnosis to kind of walk her through what you're doing and then get agreement with the subconscious mind, I did the healing then, and she could move her neck. You know, she mm-hmm. could... The tingling in her hands from the pinched nerve stopped, and she was in vastly better mood. I mean, that was kind of a physical thing. I did tell her, though, that she still needed to go to a chiropractor and had that looked at. You know, so I'm not like, you know, Shazam, here you go, don't go to the doctor. I would never right. tell somebody that. But in that case, that was a clear example of it was a lot better than when I started. And she could feel the physical difference. Her hand stopped tingling from the pinched nerve right away. The pain in her neck stopped. And she was able to kind of go home and have a good night's rest. And it was still, as of today, it was still a lot better. So,
right. Now, what is the, you kind of talked about, you mentioned a minute ago, like a miracle healing. Have you ever witnessed, I mean, what you would consider a miracle healing, and what would that be?
I have witnessed things that I thought were pretty miraculous healings, like stuff like fractures getting healed up, sprains just fixing themselves, heart rhythms getting back in alignment.
Wow.
But these things, it's not always... It's not always possible that everyone can do that all the time. It takes a lot of practice, basically. You get to a point that you can consistently get healings like that. And you have to make sure the other person isn't fighting against it. Which, believe it or not, with healing, that's like the biggest thing. There are some people, and I know this sounds weird, but there's some people who actually want to suffer. And when you actually want to suffer, their desire to actually suffer or belief they should suffer actually works against any healing you do on them. And you have to kind of honestly kind of play a little bit of a psychologist, a little bit of emotional healing to get all those kind of emotional toxins out of them. And then you can start working the magic to get them in a better healed state.
Right. So it's very much a dual role. I mean, it's got to be on the person being healed, too, a lot of it.
You can't heal someone. Well, you might be able to overpower them, but generally speaking, you can't heal someone who doesn't want to be healed.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you know, you're talking about, you know, overpowerment. What, you know, can you use things to control people?
You can do that, and there's certainly a lot of techniques to do that. However, I'm going to give the standard warning I give to people who want to do this. I tell them usually don't do that because,
yeah.
First of all, you're going to find out it's kind of pointless. It takes a lot of energy, and it doesn't usually get you what you want. When people usually ask for that, it's a love spell, and I have to keep telling them, like, over and over and over, that's not love if you have to force them to love you. And some people get it, and a lot of people seem not to.
Right.
But you can do that. And actually, in Hands-On Chaos Magic, I don't explicitly say this is how you do that. But you could connect the dots to figure out how to do that. Because ultimately, magic is by itself morally neutral. How you use it and your beliefs about how you're using it kind of dictates what will happen as far as like flashbacks and stuff like that. And so there's some people who can very easily do those kind of things, and it's okay. And so they don't seem to get the kind of karmic backlash that you see. Because they don't believe in karmic backlashes, so it doesn't come. Right. And there's other people, when they try to do it, they get so racked by guilt after they've done the fact that they bring about just massive problems in their life. So before you start doing that kind of work, make sure you're okay with that, and you can look in the mirror and be able to do that kind of work. Otherwise, don't do it.
Now, someone in the chat room, I mean, they made more of a humorous comment about can you make people's heads explode? But, you know, for you and for what you've seen and what you've studied, what at what level do you think one can achieve using magic? I mean, what can they even really do with? I mean, if I wanted to go, I mean, even kind of put it in you know, terms of biblical verse, move a mountain, just move it 20 feet to the right.
I've never seen that happen.
But I mean, do you believe that someone could achieve that kind of ability?
It would be highly improbable right now.
Mm-hmm.
However, if our society changed and our collective belief structures changed, maybe. Now, I have seen stuff. Like in February, I did a ritual at an event where we had people who had scratches and, like, had burn marks, small burn marks on their arm. Like, that is physical kind of manifestation was, you know, true. And I recorded the ritual, and there's sounds from that ritual that were not in any of the ritual. Like, so, again, those kind of things, scratches, burn marks out of thin air, isn't quite the mountain analogy, but it's at least, it's getting in that direction at least.
Right. Well, I guess kind of on what you were saying there, if you think that could be, you know, possible maybe if, you know, the world kind of changed, society changed. So does that mean that the kind of all magic is, I don't know, I'm trying to word it right, rooted in the connection of everything?
Well, that's certainly a belief that many systems have, and it's currently a belief that I pretty well, I don't think it's true, but in practice it definitely has served me well.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that when human beings are social creatures, and we're social creatures on more levels than just our physical communication. We're probably social creatures on psychic levels too. And it's just been my experience that if you get a group of people who are really open to magic in the same area, that weird things happen more often that are verifiable. You start putting people in who are vehemently against the belief in the supernatural at all, and it inhibits any kind of supernatural experiences. Not for everyone. It can get overpowered. It's kind of like which set of beliefs or intentions are more powerful around you right there. Now, a magician actually works in a lot of ways to be able to overcome that. Via his own skill and power to overcome that collective pressure in the direction they want to go.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm really kind of in a lot of thought with this tonight. So now with your you do the lessons, the seminars, the hands-on chaos magic. What do you do in those exactly?
Well, when I go to Seattle on the 23rd to 25th, what we're going to do is I'm working with Phil Farber, and in that seminar we're exploring the connection between neuro-linguistic programming and non-linear results, basically magic. We're basically going to study using neuro-linguistic programming and some techniques from there in a different way to get magical results, like drawing a new lover to your life or getting greater prosperity or stuff like that. So we're actually teaching people kind of different techniques that are open-handed, that you don't need ritual robes or stuff like that, to actually like change their lives and actually draw different things to you that they want. Mm-hmm. Or to change parts of themselves, which is also a very, very important part of magic, to be able to change parts of yourself, to become more than you were yesterday. Like, right. So if you're, you know, if you wanted to be a writer, and if there's other writers out there, I encourage you to go ahead and write that book. But you're afraid of public speaking, you might use magic and willfully change yourself so that way you could get over your fear of public speaking.
Right. Now, NLP, we talked about NLP last time you were on, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, we did, a little bit.
Yeah, because I thought that the NLP, to me, is something that's very interesting. And you know, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but for those who really don't know what NLP is, can you kind of give a brief description of it and kind of a little bit of what it's about?
NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. It was developed by Bandler and Grinder. It is effectively applied cognitive science with like therapeutic and persuasion techniques added in. That's kind of a different way of looking at how we model our world, so that way when you change the model of the world, you're actually changing your perception of the world. And when you change your perception of the world, it actually is different as far as you can tell. Mm-hmm. So NLP tends to use all of our senses to make vast changes to your personality in a way that you want it to change. So, like, if you had a phobia of something, you could use NLP techniques to get over the phobia very quickly. If you wanted to get social rapport with somebody, there's certain NLP techniques you could do with your body language when you study them to actually get in sync with the other person. That's just the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more that it goes on from there.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And there's now I honestly heard about NLP through there was a guy from the UK. He had a TV show. I can't ever remember his name, and he used to be more or less to play pranks on people and really just mess with them. I mean, how dangerous, I guess, can NLP be? I mean, it's kind of watching him and hearing, you know, also your explanations of it, and it, to me, it's kind of a scary thing that it could be dangerous.
Well, you have to understand, it is a applied cognitive science. What people don't understand about cognitive science is that cognitive science and some of the things that you actually can look at in psychology are pretty dangerous if used wrongly. And people are using them out there. I mean, most of advertising really uses NLP and cognitive science to get you to do things. I mean,
exactly.
And it's very successful. They wouldn't do it if it wasn't successful. I mean, so it's being out there. It's being used out there all the time. In fact, we're exposed to those kind of things all the time, more than we possibly can imagine.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's in a lot of advertisements. You know, we could almost do a whole segment on NLP itself, because I do. I find it very fascinating. But I tell you, Andre, we only got a few minutes left here, so please let everybody know about your seminars you got coming up, websites that they can maybe find some more information, and not only that, but Chaos Magic, which is one of the books you have out there. Now, do you have any others, and of course, the upcoming?
No, just Hands on Chaos Magic is my only book so far, but I'm starting to produce hypnosis CDs that are going to be available on my website, which is AndreaVitimus.com. The Seattle information will actually also be on the website within the next couple days, probably tonight, actually. And then at the end of September, I will be out in Toronto for our Canadian listeners doing a – on Friday, we're actually going to do a few different classes. One is a tapping bliss now, getting into a blissful state within 30 seconds or less is one of the classes, which will be awesome. And then there's also going to be another class where – and we're going to record it and telecast it to basically on Friday – basically where we talk about the most weird supernatural experiences that I've had as a practicing magician, including some of the exorcisms that I've had to do and just the odd things that have actually happened to me when I've been doing magic. And then all Saturday we're doing a day-long training in Toronto, so that'll be awesome. The Seattle thing will be a whole weekend of training for people who can get out to Seattle. It'll be worth it. Phil Farber is a great presenter too, and together we're going to just rock people's world out there. We're going to rock everyone's world, you know. And the book that I'm writing now is basically called Hypnoenergetics, which is – it's going to be – really it's kind of like looking at what I was saying, kind of divorcing the magic from the systems of magic even more to say, hey – how does this information actually work? How do these systems actually play together? How can we get alignment with the people so when we're doing work with different people, we can get better results just because we're more in sync with them?
Right. And I have to say, so this whole time, I have been mispronouncing your first name.
You're kind of close. It's Andrea. It's Andrea. So, there you go.
Well, I will remember that, Al, because I've been calling you Andre. So,
Andre. A lot of people do, and I don't get offended. So,
Well, I can tell because now you've been on two shows, and I'm pretty sure last time I called you Andre too.
So, I don't get offended. I just go, whatever, you know.
Well, Andrea, I really appreciate you coming on tonight and joining us to, you know, talk about, you know. Chaos magic and what it encompasses. It was very interesting, I have to say. Very, very interesting.
Well, thank you, Jim. Have me come back not in like 8 months or 9 months next time, you know?
Yeah.
I'll come back.
Hey, or maybe sooner. Like I said, you know, I would really like to get in more with you on NLP at some time. And like I said, we can always just do a nice little hour segment on it, I'm sure. Because I find it very fascinating and what I've seen some people do with NLP in a way. It's amazing, it's scary, but very cool too. You know.
Yeah, I actually plan to get my formal NLP certification done before November.
Oh man! Now how long have you been going at that? Because now you got me nervous. I want to check into that myself.
I've been studying NLP for a few years, but to get the certificate, you have to just go somewhere for a week and get it crammed down your throat and pass the tests, and then after you pass the test, you're good to go.
Right. Well, I'll have to check it out. Well, again, Andrea, I really appreciate it. Thanks so much, and we'll definitely look forward to having you back on.
Well, thank you.
All right, and we'll talk to you later. Matter of fact, will you just hang on the line with me for a second?
Absolutely.
All right, I'll be back in just a moment. So thank you so much. Appreciate it. All right, everybody. That was Andrea Vitimus. There I go, pronouncing names wrong. Hey, you know, it's not the first time. Done it many, many times before. But really appreciate everybody. And we got to get out of here because we got our next show coming up. And I apologize for being right on it. So we are gone, guys. Listen to the Jackal's Head coming up next, right here on Tenacity Radio.